Hello, everybody. Welcome to RPG Cast, episode 797 for the week of January 10th, 2026. Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year. We are back.
Woo. I'm Chris Privateer here with Kelly Ryan.
Hi.
Ryan Costa.
Hello.
Robert Albright.
Hello.
And you. Thanks for joining us. This is the weekly podcast where we talk about RPGs and stuff. And I'm going to go play my slot machine game now. Bye.
Wow.
Did you get addicted to gambling?
I like to gamble over the break. Yeah. I've been playing Clover Pit a lot. Which is demonic slot machine gambling, but also Bellatro type stuff where you can it's roguelike slot machines, Kelly. So
I haven't even played Bellatro yet.
Make the numbers go up.
And that is a key thing with you, Chris. You like seeing the numbers go up.
I love seeing the numbers go up. I think that one guy who makes songs about games made one for Bellatro, and I think it's called Number Go Up. Forget his name.
I'll have to look that up.
The Stupendium?
Yeah, Stupendium. Thank you.
Okay.
That guy.
I mean, there's a few different people, but he's
got a lot of production value in his. So that's that's why they take so long to come out, I guess.
They have a lot of production value.
Oh, is it more than one person?
No. It's a...
Is that their pronouns? Okay.
Pronouns, cool. Yes.
Gotcha. Thank you. Yeah. So, what do I say about Bellatro? I think I talked about it on a few casts ago. So, I'll just say that I've gotten the endings of Bellatro. I have had a small taste of divine level gambling, and I would like to have more. So I'm not really done with it, but I've been having issues on my Steam Deck with Bellatro where it just like, and it seems to be Clover Pit. And it seems like Clover Pit has some sort of issue where I play my Steam Deck on a stand hovering above me in bed with Joy-Cons for my controller so I can have my hands down at my side. It's very ergonomic for somebody who spends too much time at the computer and working all day. They need a different setup for gaming that is not stressing the same muscles. So anyway, so I've got my AirPods in and my controllers in. I'm super comfy in bed, and every 20 to 30 minutes, without fail, in Clover Pit, my controller disconnects. And it's weird Bluetooth troubleshooting every time it happens. And I don't know if it's the Steam Deck, if it's Clover Pit plus the Steam Deck, if it's a bug, do I need to go back to the beta version of SteamOS on there, which I used to be on, but I got rid of it because it was like finally time to be on a stable version of the SteamOS. I want my vacation to go great, so I switched it all back to anyway, so techie, it sucks when you're a tech person because you try to fix everything that's ever broken in your life tech-related, and then you spend more time doing that than actually playing things. This is a me problem.
Yeah, I feel that one.
Yeah.
Having a dad that was somewhat of a mechanic, we never bought new things. We just fixed the same thing over and over again until it was completely unfixable. And you can't really do that anymore.
I blame the internal part of the game. You're winning too much, and the demonic slot machine just has to try winning somehow.
It's true.
Chris, I learned over the break that people have figured out how to jailbreak their wheelchairs so that they can go faster.
Oh, that's amazing.
It's amazing, but it's also terrible that they have to do that.
I mean, yes, I guess it depends why it was not enabled to begin with. If they're charging for it, then yeah, that sucks.
They're charging for it.
Oh, that's terrible. We do not need DRM wheelchairs, please.
Yeah.
Well, humanity has got some issues.
Well, there could be part of a reason why it is limited for like safety purposes.
Well, except no. If they're charging for as an upsell, that's not it then. Right?
It's not safety. Yeah. It's inshedification.
Woo! Everyone's favorite.
You charge at this certain place.
But one thing that isn't in shitified is the Switch 2. I promised I would tell the SD card story.
Oh, yes, Kelly, tell us your SD card story.
So, a couple of days before Christmas, I am setting up my nephew's Switch 2. Because my sister isn't very tech inclined, and, you know, but the with Mario Kart being tied to the store, I needed to make sure that they had a Switch, a Nintendo account, and have that so that Mario Kart could be installed there. Because if you try to access the eShop on Christmas morning or Christmas, even Christmas Eve, you're going to have a bad time. So it's like 2 in the morning. I couldn't sleep, so I decided that I'm going to start messing with my nephew's Switch 2. And did I tell you guys that I'd broke the SD card on my Switch trying to install it?
I've done that with SD cards before. They're so tiny.
I had bent it by accident getting it out of the package because I'm an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I am trying to be so careful with my nephew's SD card.
Kelly, did you eat the SD card?
No. Okay. I have it on my finger, and my hands aren't as steady as they used to be, and it falls.
Oh, so that SD card is just gone now.
I had no idea where it was. It sounded like it fell in my keyboard.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
I'm pulling out keys frantically. I have got a flashlight. I'm searching everywhere. It is gone, and it is 2 in the morning, and I'm about in tears because it's gone. And so I go, and I slam my keyboard tray in frustration. And whenever I'm messing underneath my desk, my keyboard tray sometimes comes off of its rails, and it falls, and it slams on my foot. I thought I almost broke my
foot. I shouldn't laugh at this. I'm sorry. But just the series of bad luck with this is kind of just...
Well, here's the thing. You know, as I'm bending down to investigate my foot to see if it's broken, guess what I see?
The SD card.
Woo! It was the most sitcom thing I think I've ever experienced in my whole life. Because my desk must have had a black hole. Or not a black hole, because it wouldn't have shown back up again. A wormhole to another dimension that got jostled when the keyboard tray fell. Because I had looked everywhere for that damn SD card. And how it showed back up again when the keyboard tray fell, I have no clue. But I'm like, well, I'm glad it turned up. I am mad it turned up the way it did, and that my foot really hurts now.
Oh, still?
No, but there's still like a pretty noticeable mark where it landed. There was a pretty bad bruise.
So the keyboard is what landed on your foot, right?
No, the keyboard tray.
The keyboard tray. Okay.
Yeah. It had kind of...
I mean, I would assume the keyboard went with it, though.
Oh, yeah. The keyboard went with it, but the wooden keyboard tray... like fell at a 45 degree angle and cut wood right into my foot. And it was not pleasant, but I'm glad I found the SD card and I managed to install it and it was fine. But at the time I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to buy a new one. And if I find the original one, I've got a free SD card.
I can just picture a zoom into the SD card afterwards and just thinking it's, Junji Ito and Rowan Atkinson had a collaboration.
Yeah. And everybody else that I've told this story to thought that the punchline was that the kitten ate it.
I thought the punchline was going to be is you inhaled it and then it was gone.
No. No, not quite. Although I've worried about that often with how tiny those things are. And yeah, I was worried that the kitten was going to find it and think it was a snack because, you know, I'm doing something and I do a lot of Legos at my desk, so I find a lot of stray Legos underneath my desk, and every time I saw the SD card, it was a stray Lego, and I'm going like, yes, there it is, no, it's a freaking Lego, and I pick up the Lego and put it on my desk so I can put it in my stray Lego tub, and no, the kitten would just knock it back off my desk. She loves stray Legos, by the way.
Funny.
So yeah, I hope that was as funny as I had built it up.
That was pretty good, Kelly.
as far as Christmas goes, I got a handful of free games. The only one I booted up Dragon Quest 1 and 2 a little bit, but I'm going to come back to that one. But I did boot up Hades 2, and I've been really enjoying the crap out of that. I don't know if anybody here has played Hades 2 or the original Hades.
Not yet.
I've played a lot. I played quite a bit of Hades, but I have not played any Hades 2 yet.
Hades 2 is really good, and you know, you had this game that was pretty much perfect, and then they announced a sequel, and I'm like, well, how are they going to make it better? Oh, they made it better. It actually took me a little bit to wrap my brain around the combat this time around, because it's focused a lot more on charge attacks and casting and kind of managing your mana and knowing when to burn all of your mana and when to save it and when to kind of use your ultimate and all of that fun stuff. One of the boss fights is a siren band that actually plays a song while you're fighting them, and the main siren is in like a little clamshell, and when she goes into the shell to basically hide from you, the music gets muffled, which is just such a nice touch. What else? I had like a whole list of things I was going to bring up. Once you're kind of halfway through the game, and you know, the point of this one, so the original Hades, you were trying to get out of Hades. This one, you're trying to get back into Hades to save Hades, mm-hmm. your father. You're playing as Zagreus' sister. Well, about halfway through the game, you get the ability to go to the surface world.
Oh, which is there
like
you go.
A whole other set of levels. You don't get full access to it right away because I guess Melanie is her name. Can't handle the surface world until she gets some magic that gives her some resistance to it. So if you try to go up there, you'll slowly lose life. And the whole purpose of that is so that you can get some upgrades so that you can continue trying to get back into the underworld. But then eventually you'll unlock the ability to go back up there whenever you want. And there's like a series of fights on a bunch of different ships. And you fight a Kraken. And I haven't beaten the Kraken yet, but I also haven't beaten Kronos yet, which is the main bad guy of Hades 2. I'm just not that good yet. I've gotten close, but just had bad RNG or just didn't have enough health to really survive some of the attacks. But I'm playing in God mode, and I think my damage resistance is up to like 65 right now. Pretty sure just like the last game, it maxes out at 85. But I'm hoping to get my first clear at some point and then seeing what's going to happen. Cause you know, like the first game, you know, beating Hades was just the beginning.
Now, question I have, if you happen to know, is when you go to the surface world too early, does your health drain to zero or one?
Yeah, it drains to zero.
Okay. Cause either way, if it was zero or one, it just seems like hard mode for speedrunners being like, let's see if I can do this.
Yeah, I imagine so. I unlocked the ability to survive. It seemed pretty quick for me, but I had also been playing the crap out of this game. So your mileage may vary. There's also a couple of additional NPCs you run into in the surface world, like Hercules.
Hercules!
Yeah, I'm wondering if I'm going to end up in a fight with him because he told me to go back to my hole. Yeah.
To your hole. Wow.
Sort of how he put it. I don't remember.
Who said you were allowed out?
I've been more focused on trying to finish the underground part first, but also I don't know, maybe I need to go back up there because there might be some upgrades that I've missed out on up in the surface. Because like you're doing a bunch of gathering to get upgrades because you've got a big cauldron and you need specific parts like Nightshade and Mandrakes and all of that fun stuff, and you've got to gather that stuff in the underworld and overworld. And the weapon variety has been very interesting too, because you start out with a staff that has kind of a long reach attack and then a throwing attack, and then you get a pair of daggers later that are like super fast, quick dexterity weapons, and then what else? You unlock a pair of fire sticks that have a good ranged attack and give you like a spin thing. The axe is the one that I've used the least because it's way too slow for my taste, but eventually I'm going to want to try to master it because they want you to try and use all of the weapons in the game. And then one of the last weapons I've unlocked is a set of skulls that you throw. Like, you throw them and then you have to go retrieve them. Which seems cumbersome, but you've also got a dash attack, so it's kind of easy to go retrieve the skulls once you've thrown them. So,
can you get an animal companion like a dog that would retrieve it for you?
Funny you mentioned that, because there are a handful of animal companions in this game. Mm-hmm. One of the only one I have unlocked so far is a bullfrog that so when you're in the underworld, there are these shades that you talk to, and you play a little Simon Says mini game, and that's how you get some currency for upgrade. Well, if you have the frog with you, you don't have to do the Simon Says mini game. Mm-hmm. I need to look up the other companions, because I think Josh mentioned that there's a cat. And I don't know if how useful the cat will be. I won't care how useful it is. That will be my perma companion. Because cat. But yeah, the game is definitely worth the hype. Had Andy played Hades?
No, not yet. And neither have I. I have heard that good things about it. Yeah. So I should do it.
I mean, I was heavily expecting good things from it because the first game is very good.
Well, all their games are good.
I don't know about that because I've not played any of their other games.
Oh, okay.
Transistor is really good. Pyre is fine. Bastion is just Hades 0.5. And Hades is amazing. And Hades 2 is amazing. And I'm glad it's... Because I know Josh was playing it in Early Access. And I was waiting for it to come out of Early Access before I dove in. And I'm playing it on my Switch 2. And I actually prefer kind of playing it in docked mode with my Pro Controller because I have the sprint button mapped to the underside button, and it kind of helps with my dexterity and all that. So, and by the way, the physical Switch 2 version of Hades 2 is not a key card.
Hey, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been having a lot of conundrums lately about whether or not I want to, which versions of which games I want to buy if they're on Switch and Switch 2.
Mm-hmm.
And lately, if Switch 2 version is a key card, I've just been getting the Switch 1 version. That's what I plan on doing with Dragon Quest.
Yeah, I know a lot of people have been importing some of the Euro Asia. Ones because of the fact some of the games that we're getting as key cards, the South Pacific Asian is getting as actual cards on cart. So I know Play Asia has been announced when their like pre-orders are up. In fact, I just saw one today across a different Discord where Lollipop Chainsaw Repop and a visual novel Love Our Kiss are both getting cart editions on the imports. It says English/JPN import. So that's usually the Asian market ones.
And supposedly different sized carts are coming out for companies that don't want to buy the big carts to do that.
Yeah, I think part of that is, I think some of that, I feel, is in response to the Japanese ruling, where they said key cards are not eligible for, what was it? Not storage, but archiving in their national, you know, archives, basically.
I see. But anyway, I've got another handful of games for Christmas because Vaughn got me the Trails in the Sky game and Dragon Quest 1 and 2 and the Tales of Zillia remaster. So I don't know which one I'm going to get to first. And I've got a little bit of backtrack homework because we're doing another Indies episode and an episode about tactical games that aren't necessarily big franchises like Fire Emblem or Final Fantasy Tactics. And I picked up some stuff on sale that are going to tie into that. So I want to get to those at some point. But
Wait, did I sign up for that one?
I don't know.
Because that's like right up my alley.
Yeah, you'll have to check this sheet. Because I had mentioned like talking about Mercenary Saga, and somebody was like, well, let's just do a short episode about tactical games. And we were all like, okay.
Talking about indie games, I wonder.
Yeah, it probably was you, Dalandar, now that I think about it.
No, I did not sign up for it because you had Ryan, Josh, you, and Paul. So I was like, yeah, that's enough people on that one.
Yeah, unfortunately, sometimes the potluck episodes get a little crazy because of the number of people on them and the number of games we talk about.
But, yeah, and I've played a lot of tactical games because they're kind of they're not quite my bread and butter, but they are up there. So, yeah, I think I felt best to skip on that one.
Yeah, but a game came out on PSN Essential. I mean, it's been out for a while because I played a little bit of it on Steam over the break, but then the PlayStation version came out, or rather, came to PSN Essential for free, and I got sucked into it. Have you guys heard of a game called Core Keeper?
I've heard of it.
Vaguely.
It's kind of an open sandbox game like Terraria, but top-down. Like I was playing Nissess before the break, and that was a little bit of that, but with the town builder. And this one, even though it has multiplayer, is strictly like you're in the underground exploring.
I feel like we had a news article talking about the multiplayer, like going up to 8 people before the winter break.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. But if you have PSN Essential, basically the bare bones PSN, that's free for this month. And I highly recommend it because even if you're not too much of an open world Terraria / Minecraft fan, the way this game plays is really fun. You start out in this core, or you're an astronaut that crashes into this planet, and there are these cores, and you have to go beat these bosses to unlock these cores, and then, you know, beat another set of bosses, and then beat the final boss. But the exploration and traversal in this has been fun as hell, and building like giant conveyor belts to mine ore for me while I'm out exploring is also fun. And I really like the art style of the game too, because it looks kind of like 16-bit Secret of Mana, and I just had to. I could sit here and gush about it, but I don't know if I'm selling you guys on it at all.
How varied is the stuff you find while you explore? Like,
yeah,
are you just going to find new spots to get, you know, the same ore over and over, or is there?
Yeah, because you beat the first boss, which is a giant slime, and then kind of venture out further because the whole map kind of revolves around the core, because there's also a giant worm that does a big circle around the map that you've got to fight. And then past that layer, there's a wall that you have to beat the first 3 bosses before you can go past that wall. And then there's like a couple of different biomes that you've got to go through, and then yeah, get progressively stronger and stronger, or to go further out into the different biomes. And then at the end of the game, there's like a really harsh biome that you can't even mine through, that you can explore, that's kind of dangerous, but the danger is also what makes it fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
Another question I would have, these types of games honestly aren't usually up my alley. So for the lazy life sim person, farming sim person, how in depth do you have to make these conveyor belts, connect everything together, or can it almost be done automatically?
You have to make them by hand, but what I end up doing is kind of, typically you want to set up your base around the center of the map anyway, because that's where your first waypoint is and all of that. And I end up like making a bunch of them that just go to the center of the map. And then as I go further and further out, trying to connect to those main veins, if that makes any sense.
It does. For me, a lot of the description looking at it almost seems like a 2D version of games like Satisfactory and Factorio and stuff like that. So.
Yeah. And at world creation, you kind of have a bit of control over the biomes that you can generate. Sort of, or the way the biomes generate. Like, you could have them all go to, or have all the different rivers and caverns and stuff go to extreme and make like a really crazy world. Or what I did in my world, just for the heck of it, was I turned the lakes all the way up and then everything else all the way down. So it created kind of a water world with islands. And instead of digging through all of the biomes, I've been like building land bridges through all of the biomes, which is kind of a different way to play.
Mm-hmm.
And you can like create a whole bunch of different worlds to play through them with the same character, just to see what kind of stuff you can bake. Like I needed to go get some cows, and I couldn't find any cows in my world, so I made kind of an easier world to go pick up some cows and then put them back in my world. So you can do that if you want to. There's also a creative mode too, that you can, if you just want to, you know, build and farm and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And the farming is pretty robust too. Like, I finally unlocked a 5x5 hoe and garden shovel that the hoe automatically harvests everything, and the garden shovel automatically replants everything in a 5x5 grid, as long as you have seeds in your inventory. So that's been kind of a fun thing, playing around with different crops and stuff, and you cook the crops to give you different bonuses for your builds and things like that.
Definitely sounds expansive for a farming sim type game. There's just a lot to dig into, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like these kind
of dig into.
I like these kind of games because I like exploring worlds like this. Just, you know, keep digging. Oh boy, there's another cavern. Oh boy, there's another treasure chest. Oh man, I found a biome that has alpacas. This kind of stuff is my jam. And Necess, I rolled credits on and was having way too much fun with. And then this game comes out on PSN, and it's like, okay, this is completely my jam. I'm going to keep going with this.
Mm-hmm.
So I've played other stuff. I don't want to go too in-depth just because we've got a lot of stuff to cover. I did play through the original Power Wash Simulator again, because a bundle with all of the DLC was on the eShop for pretty cheap.
So you needed to play through the original again?
I didn't have to, but I wanted to.
Hmm. It's also on Apple Arcade now. It's like, oh
it is?
Yeah. I don't know that I want to play it on there, but it's been tempting me.
Which game?
Power Wash Simulator.
Oh, Power Wash. For some reason, I heard Pow World, and I don't know why.
I wonder what's up with Pal World these days.
They keep updating it. They just had an update, and like it's still not 1.0. Game will never come out of early access.
There's a few like that. And I didn't know Apple Arcade was still a thing, to be honest. Oh, yeah.
Doesn't mean anyone plays on it, but it's still a thing.
But that's pretty much all I've been playing.
Cool.
I keep going with Hades until I roll credits, so who knows how long that's gonna take me.
What about you, Tam?
My friend Mickey Ren, who's a streamer, has been playing Sea of Stars on her channel and watching her play it, because I've had it in the backlog for a while. I was like, this actually looks pretty good. And the music has been really good. So I actually started playing it. And then I wasn't feeling too great Thursday and Friday, so I called out of work, and I've just been sitting here playing it. I'm pretty late into the game, but it's really fun. It really captured like late SNES, early PS1, not graphically, but just, you know, fun immersive worlds that I've missed. So I have been really enjoying it, and like the combat system's fun. The characters are, you know, very unique. They're not overly cookie cutter. I mean, and the story has definitely got some intrigue to it. It's not like, I wouldn't say the most innovative story overall, but it does have some nice beats to it. So that's been pretty much the main game I've played this week. I have dispensed a lot of liberty.
Oh?
Yes. All the liberty. By killing a lot of bugs this week. Because I play Helldivers 2.
That's fair. Are people happy with that game again?
For the most part.
But going back to Sea of Stars, what is your opinion on Garl, the kind of chubby kid in that game?
Like, what point of the game are we discussing about?
Just in general, do you love him or do you hate him? Because I think that he is the most divisive character in that game.
I have no real opinion on him.
Okay. I guess
you've been skipping the cutscenes, Tam.
No.
Oh, okay.
I just don't really have an opinion one way or the other. I don't necessarily hate him. I don't necessarily like him. I don't. He's the game's tank for. He actually deals a lot of physical damage. But I haven't really, I don't really have an opinion one way or the other of him.
It just seemed like during the backtrack, the consensus was either he is my son and you will not touch him, or he needs to die immediately because he's the most irritating kid that's ever been in an RPG. And there was no in between.
My friend Mickey, who I was mentioning streaming this, the last I saw, she was doing the new DLC story stuff. So, I will say during a particular scene in the game, she was very upset about what was happening to Garl. So she definitely falls into the camp of Precious Boy.
Yeah.
I have just found this brief conversation on the Sea of Stars being a bit refreshing, because I've been in the people around me that have discussed this game have firmly been in the I hate it to the point of it should never exist.
Wow.
So hearing people that like Sea of Stars has been, oh, maybe it's just, you know, it's a good game.
It is. I think it is actually a very good game. I definitely can understand why some people may not necessarily like it, because I have put in a lot of hours into this already. Easily 40, 50 hours. So I can see that kind of frustrating. And there are definitely some frustrating bits, you know, like There is faster travel, but there's no actual fast travel. And there's some people who feel that, oh, if your game does not have fast travel now, you know, you're a crappy game.
I don't agree with that, but that's certainly a thing.
Yeah, there is definitely people. One of the issues my friend Mickey has had is it's because there is a map in the game, but it doesn't tell you where where anything is on the map. So you have to try and memorize, like, if you have backtracking or trying to do a side quest or something, you have to try and memorize where all the different, like, cities are or dungeons or the name, you know, which
Be problematic then. Yeah.
So there, it definitely has its problems, but I think overall it's a very fun. I'm having a lot of fun with this. Like, this has been the main game I've been playing for the last week. Like, I almost didn't even start up the Dragon Quest VII demo, which I don't know if we actually have that as a news item.
We do.
Okay.
We do. I was actually trying to convince Buddy to come on so that he could talk about it, but he was busy today. Because he was like, hey, Kel, you can pet the cat.
I tagged you on their Discord saying, pause! Kelly, you can pet the cats and the dogs.
But, you know, going back to Sea of Stars, I think the people that don't like the game, I don't like to generalize, but I honestly think the people that didn't like the game went into it expecting it to be Chrono Trigger again and not judging the game on its own merits. And my only real problem with the game is that the two main characters are dull. They're dull and they don't really experience any conflict. Which is why I think, to be honest, Garl is the main character of the game and them two are just his lackeys.
I don't agree with that. They definitely they are not necessarily dull, but I do think I will agree that Garl definitely carries much of the character interactions for the game.
Yeah. I don't know. We have a whole backtrack on this. I don't want to rehash too much of it. You can go to that and listen to us talk about the game for a while. But I'm glad you're liking it.
Yeah, no, I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it. I'll probably, you know, if it wasn't for streaming, I would probably beat it this weekend. Because I am streaming the Tales of Xillia remaster on our channel.
How has that been?
I mean, I don't really notice much difference from the original.
Okay.
I don't really know what they really had to remaster on this. I do have one complaint, is that the PlayStation, it was PlayStation 3, right?
Yeah.
So, Bandai Namco did a promotion with one of their other game series called Idolmaster. I don't know if anyone has heard of this.
I've heard of Idolmaster.
No, okay.
I've never heard of it.
Well, they did a collaboration, some collaboration skins or, you know, outfits for the female characters of Tales of Xillia for it. And those skins are not available, but they were available on the original version that was here in the US. So because they incorporated, like, all the DLC costumes is just, you know, available, like they did with Tales of Graces.
Except those costumes?
Exactly. Yeah, except for those Idolmaster costumes. I don't know if it's because of a licensing thing or because it is for a game that, you know, came out at the time of Tales of Xillia. I don't think they really plan to ever, like, remaster the Idolmaster games.
Probably licensing is what I would guess.
Oh, because again, Bandai Namco makes it.
Well, yeah, but maybe those outfits were created by a prominent fashion designer.
I don't have a feeling that would, because the outfits are based on those characters, so I have a feeling it's more in the lines of, you know, it is a collaboration with a game that they are not planning to ever, like, remaster or bring back out. That is my suspicion on that, but that's all my whole, Or it could be because of the music, because there were music tracks tied to those outfits if the girls were wearing them during combat. So now that I could actually see being the issue with the licensing. But otherwise, you know, it's Tales of Zillia. It's one of my favorite Tales of games, and I'm enjoying it again.
Did you do Mela, or did you start Mela or Jude?
So having played this originally, because I played Jude, my wife played Mela, you know, initially. Mela's side of the story only makes sense if you play as Jude first, is my opinion.
Interesting.
I think there's a couple scenes where, you know, watching Mela's events happen, they don't make as much sense if you don't play as Jude first.
Okay.
That is my take. So I am doing as Jude first on our, and you can catch me here tonight as long as I am feeling up to it and awake, because I was up like 22 hours yesterday straight.
Everybody buy this game so that they'll remaster Zillia 2.
Well, they are already planning to remaster everyone. It's just in fact, I believe they came out and said that this year they plan to announce some of the older ones.
Finally.
Yeah, I think a lot of it just has to do with what they have assets to, what, you know, and what's easily accessible. Because, you know, a lot of the older ones, the assets are probably like hidden away or destroyed.
Yeah. I want modern versions of the 2D ones so bad.
I doubt they will go that far yet.
According to a Famitsu interview, the next game that's going to be remastered is Tales of Zillia 2, so it is official from the series producer.
Yes! I hope they do a collector's edition. I missed out on the collector's edition of that the first time.
No, we're talking Tales of the Tales of series, not Chrono Trigger.
Yeah, I'm not holding my breath for that.
Yeah, not holding my breath for not holding my breath on any Square Enix remaster until they say something.
It's funny because people were very divisive on Zillia 2, but I love the ever loving crap out of it because not only did I love the story, but it has Rollo, who's the best cat in the game ever.
See, cat. All it takes for Kelly is a cat.
He's so cute.
Rollo is pretty cute, though.
He's adorable. Oh, and the side quest where you find 100 cats. And you can go to Luger's apartment, and next door to the apartment is where all the cats reside. And some of them look like Tails characters.
I mean, that's always been a thing where they try and make throwbacks to other Tales games. Like some of the fishing lures in Tales of Arise were based off of some of the mascot characters from like Tales of Abyss and Tales of Berseria and such.
Well, some of the relics in Tales of Arise were references to other Namco games, and one of them was a lucky cat that was Rollo.
Yeah. It's like Tales of the Abyss, Jude's belt was a reference to Pac-Man.
I never noticed.
Oh, yeah. So yeah. But otherwise, I haven't really played much this week because it's been a bit very busy. The last few weeks have actually been really busy for my work, surprisingly. And this week, of course, with all the like doctor's offices and whatnot being back in after the holiday, it has just been very busy.
It's understandable.
Yeah. So what about you, Ryan?
So bear with my attempt here to try selling a game that might only be geared 100% towards me, but I got addicted to a game. I've played 39 hours over the last couple of weeks. I just looked at the timer for that. It's called J-Rogue PG. It is a JRPG roguelite that basically you go through biomes. You build your party of four, similarly to like a Final Fantasy V with classes, that you unlock additional classes by, say, one character class. You have to, like, Lancer you unlock by using a fighter doing double jump twice kind of thing. So once you use that, it's like easy to unlock some of these classes.
There was another game that did that. I'm trying to think of what it was.
There's a few games that have some of this general aesthetic of, to some extent anyway, like Dungeon Antiqua. There's Crescent Tower. Crescent Tower isn't a roguelite, though. And with this one, there's 27 classes in total. Each class unlocks its own set of abilities. Items that you can equip, the weapons have the possibility of up to six or eight different, like almost body, like body part types. Like, so you can thrust, side attack, high attack, ranged attack, and nine different elements for the magic users. And every enemy has, it starts off with question marks. You have to figure out what they're weak against. And of course, every time you go through, even if you have the same party, you might not have equipment that's good against this particular enemy from this biome. And there's 25 biomes to go through. So each time you go through this, there's a brand new way of party building. And it's just addictive to figure out, like, okay, how am I going to do well this time? How am I going to do well this time? Because you open treasure chests. What you get from there can be entirely different. The type of chests you get. There is a very fun type of chest called a destiny chest, where it'll say things like, do you want 20% additional agility for the rest of your run, or 25% additional attack? And it'll, that's like, both of them are great. In some instances, they have, because you can unlock the ability to not just die once, you can have like multiple resurrections. So you'll have a, do you get a special weapon, or do you get five pieces of currency to unlock things after the game, but as soon as you start your next fight, everyone dies? So it's like, okay, do I really think this is the time I'm going to make it to the final boss, or do I just get out while it's the getting's good, just so I can get additional resources? And just managing all of that while still being in a really fun JRPG combat system has been like awesome. And it doesn't look anything special. Like, when it came out in early December, was one of the things I bought on a Steam sale. It came out on December 5th, and it's $8.99 full price, and $8.99 Canadian, I should say. So it's probably like $5. And you have a game that's just full of all of this stuff, and like the fights are difficult, but not like, I like roguelites. I know a lot of other people might not as much, because, you know, everyone dies. It sucks starting over from the beginning, but it's almost like playing a really good combat system for like 4 hour game. So it's very good bite-sized. You save when you make it to the next biome spot by using a tent and turn the game off. Come back later and just, how do I thought puzzle my way as far as I can, taking out these enemies?
Yeah, I've seen this one come up a few times, like just the name scrolling through my news feed. So I might be willing to try this. I mean, $7 is not a bad for a sort of indie-ish game. So
the developer had done a few other more story-based RPG Maker of games that led to this. So it's not just someone that came out of nowhere. They know how to use this art style and gameplay type to get the best from it. And it shows to me anyway. And yeah, there's a lot to play with.
I may pick up a couple other games.
That's been mostly what I've been playing so far. So is there anything that I, from what I've mentioned, I'd be like, you know, I have a question. How could I sell this on the people that are more naysayers, or try?
I mean, it sounds interesting to me, though. Not really a fan of the art style, to be honest.
Yeah. It's got that RPG Maker almost cut and paste type stuff, but enemy designs I thought were fun enough. The character ones are a little too chibi for me.
That's not unusual, though, with the RPG Maker games.
Yeah. That's one of the things that came up during the in December backtrack is this is the type of game where you can tell they had an idea and they just refined the gameplay of it to the point where it's like, this is exactly what I wanted. And I've never lost in the, like, because there's six biomes you got to go through. Each biome has at least five different fights. You start off in the beginning of the map. You look around a little bit, see how many treasure chests you can open, or power fragments, which I didn't know existed for a while. They give you permanent boosts for that particular run, and it'll be things like a big. I had one where it was you can weaken. Every character learns an ability that weakens bosses, giving them a 10% attack and defense drop while doing damage to them, and bosses are mostly immune to debuffs, so it was like their way around that. So if looking around, gathering everything you can, and then at the end of the opposite end from where you started on the map, there's a glowing yellow portal kind of thing. You walk into that, you have your fight. You win that fight, you make it to the next room. You go through the five rooms, you're now at the hub, you sell what you've don't need, buy what you can, because like, do you want more ethers because your whole party uses magic? You have all physical parties, so there's no point in you even having ethers. And then you're geared up, with however you've decided, move on to the next spot. And I've never lost in the first biome, but occasionally, you have a character a class that just I have this party. Oh no, I'm in a fire biome, and my characters happen to be weak to fire this time around, so I'm not probably going to make it too far this time. And that's going to happen with any roguelite. You just get bad RNG, but trying to make your way through it as best you can is definitely interesting for me. Where I like it when games can make a routine enemy be easy and difficult at the same time, like depending on what you have built. Oh, there's my couple minute pitch on JRPG.
Thank
Hopefully
you.
people try it out.
What's it on? Everything?
Steam only
Oh,
that
okay.
I've seen.
That doesn't exactly surprise me.
All right, who's you must have played a billion other games, right? But are we going to talk about them later?
I played a couple of demos, and my review of Kingdoms of the Dump is later on, so I might as well mention the brief bits on all of that as they come up.
So, I guess it's on to feedback.
The one fun part I'll say at the end is when I was looking at my Steam, what have you played over the year? Usually, if it's mostly just stuff I've reviewed or taken a look at, so it's like, oh, 14 games on Steam. That's not so crazy. 78 demos. I'm like, oh, I wonder how that came up over 2025.
Dalandar and I were discussing because he saw a demo of a game that I was interested in, and he messaged me, and I was like, I don't really play demos unless A, for work, being here, or B, if there's some reason for me to do it, like the Dragon Quest VII demo, which is, oh, if you beat the demo, you get this outfit for a character. Only reason I played the demo. So, but yeah, are we basically on to feedback here?
I think so.
All right. So, the question of the month, let's just call it a month. Tell us about your holiday presents you gave or received. So, Strawberry Eggs wrote in saying, coincidentally, I got the Tales of Xillia remaster for Christmas. Some other gifts of note are the full edition of Sound Horizon's latest album. Emma ni Nagaya Wo, I don't know if I pronounced that remotely right, and a Blu-ray of Steins Gate, the movie Lode Region of Deja Vu. Most of the gifts I gave were nothing special, but the most interesting might be the special wicker Hello Kitty hamper I gave to my sister, who absolutely loves it. That is an adorable gift. Fess wrote in saying, Happy New Year all. I got some Ray-Ban Meta glasses with prescription lenses from the family, and I must say they are neat. A skeptic of the whole idea of smart glasses, I now see a value to the tech, just for the discreet, beautifully effective in-arm speakers. I think all glasses should jam some of the speaker tech into everyday frames. I would ditch my AirPods for the speaker feature for all-day use, but the biggest downside is the measly battery life. These are the first-gen version meant to be worn around the house and in limited context, but I read the second version apparently addresses the battery longevity nicely. I might now be willing, in the future, to have the glasses with some type of augmented reality features, as long as I don't get a splitting headache. Not an issue with these Ray-Bans from any future AR features. I think I might be a big fan.
That's very cool. AR glasses or pseudo AR glasses.
Yeah, so any of you glasses. Any of you get anything fun for Christmas, for the holidays?
I got some coffee brewing stuff.
Oh, but, nice.
Yeah.
We all know you're if I remember right, you were very excited last year because you also got coffee brewing stuff.
Yeah, I like coffee stuff. I'm broken.
Nothing wrong with coffee. If you happen to like coffee, coffee brewing stuff is pretty big.
I got a WDT tool, which is like these little needles on a thing that you use to distribute the coffee grounds in your espresso puck. Yeah. Uh-huh. Real nerdy stuff. And I got a brush to help clean up coffee grounds off the counter. It's a really nice brush for, and Andy's more excited because now I'll keep the counter cleaner. And then Andy's telling me the Christmas gift he wanted to get me didn't come through, so I should go buy a new coffee grinder. And I've been kind of like, oh no, I have to go shopping. And
you're very anti-shopping.
Only because I'm very indecisive. So, me going shopping is a whole freaking ordeal. And, so I haven't done that yet. But it's exciting. Coffee stuff. Yay. Sorry. Who else got stuff?
How familiar are you guys with Homestar Runner?
I am aware of it.
Very aware of it.
Pretty aware. Yeah.
Fan Gamer released some Homestar Runner stuff recently. And my favorite meme from homestarrunner.com was Trogdor the Burninator.
Mm-hmm.
Vaughn got me a new Trogdor the Burninator shirt because my OG one from the 2000s is long fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
And a Trogdor the Burninator plush.
Ooh, I didn't know they had plushes of Trogdor.
It's brand new. Because I sent that to him and I joked I would have straight up murdered somebody for this back in the day. As a joke.
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't release any, they had a Trogdor shirt, but they didn't release any plushes back then. The only plush that they really had was the cheap plush. And that thing was like half my paycheck at that point. It was so expensive because it was, the Homestar Runner site was just like in a little indie site, and that their t-shirt stuff was all, it wasn't all Cafe Press, but it was before like internet t-shirts were a lot easier to make. He got me that, and explaining to my mom and sister why this stupid looking plush is making me so happy was an interesting thing. It was like, it was an internet cartoon from the 2000s. I don't know how to explain it. Because, by the way, that character was never meant to be in three dimensions.
No, it was not.
Yeah.
I actually remember sitting in my friend Robert's house. Yes, I had a friend named Robert.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as we all know, my name is also Robert.
Yes, yeah.
I remember him showing me the Trogdor cartoon off of the Homestar Runner site from before I even joined the Navy. This is how old this thing is.
And I, because I didn't grow up with a PC, I had no idea that the Peasant's Quest game that had that character was meant to be a complete parody of King's Quest.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So.
As far as me getting Vaughn presents, I painted him a Green Lantern miniature, which is probably the best mini I've ever painted to date. And I bought him all 5 robots that make Devastator. I hear that
6.
6. Okay.
Wait. Is it the Devastator from the Michael Bay movies, or was this original Devastator?
Vaughn, I don't know. Because Walmart had these for a while, but every time we would check, it was like 1 of 5, 5 of 5.
Because the original Devastator had 2 for the legs, 2 for the arms, and 2 that made up the center, so it was 6. So it must be not... So if it's saying 5 of 5, because the movie Michael Bay one had 5, and maybe other iterations had 5, that I don't know, but the original one had 6.
One of them came in a 2-pack, so okay. I think okay. It is 6. Yeah, the boxes had this confusion too. But I basically bought him Devastator, and he has not taken Devastator out of the box to assemble him yet.
Why not?
Because we've been busy. We've been kind of doing a project to clean up the spare bedroom. And he was working on that, basically breaking down a whole bunch of Lego sets to store them. And that's taken a lot longer than we thought. And tomorrow we're like going to move all those. Why am I talking about this? Basically, we was doing a cleaning project and we haven't had a chance. Because I also got a like 3 different Warhammer figures that are like really cool skeletons with the stagecoach. And I haven't had a chance to put those together yet. And I've been dying to put those together. So, yeah, but I was proud of the Green Lantern thing that I got for him, and I was very happy with the Trogdor that he got me, because that definitely gave me some, hit me right in the nostalgia feels, because if you weren't on the internet in the 2000s, every Monday, without fail, you were on HomestarRunner.com seeing if there was a new cartoon.
Yeah.
For me, that answer was no, I was not, but because I was not a big fan of Homestar Runner, but I do at least know some of the memes and some of the characters.
Oh, I loved it because it was such wholesome internet humor. It was very absurdist in a way, but I love that kind of stuff. And yeah, Trogdor.
Yeah.
It's just awesome.
So, as far as for us goes, the plan to get my kids a Switch 2 for Christmas did pay off. So we were able to save up enough money to get the kids a Switch 2 for Christmas.
Congrats.
Apparently they are fighting over it.
Sounds right. Yeah. Uh-huh.
That sounds right. So especially with my kids. So, but hey, they enjoy it. That is the key. So as far as me, I actually picked up a number of games off of that Steam sale that happened until the 5th. So I picked up Death and Request Code Z. I saw that the Goblin Slayer, I had mentioned this on the last cast, I just happened to see the Goblin Slayer, Another Adventure Nightmare Feast, gotten an actual English translation on Steam, so I picked up that. I picked up one that Dalandar and I saw off of one of the indie things that we covered, Megacopter.
Mm.
If he remembers that one.
Yeah.
I picked up Like a Dragon Pirate Yakuza in Hawaii.
Yes!
So did I. I picked up a bunch of Yakuza games to get back to playing them, so I'm excited for Yakuza.
Because I actually had the Legacy Edition of Kiwami and Kiwami 2, which have been delisted from Steam. I picked up the, I saw that there is like a Kiwami 1 and Kiwami 2 non-legacy because they did some updates that, so I bought that little upgrade. So, but they're considered completely different games. So I, yeah, it, some people are not happy about this. I picked up Attack of the Earthlings, which is you are the aliens defending yourselves from Earthlings as in a tactical RPG. Yeah, I picked up, I want to say there was a, I got this as a bun,
So wait, Attack of the Earthlings is basically the plot of Avatar, right?
It's also the plot of Toe Jam and Earl, too.
Yeah, it's not a new concept.
Okay, fair enough.
I picked up Front Mission First and Front Mission Second.
Just in time for Front Mission Third.
Yep, yep. The Nameless Slay Dragon.
Great game.
I figured you'd have played it.
Demo, at least.
So, I picked up a visual, a psychological horror visual novel that was part of an indie fest that that Downdar and I covered. Not because that was part of the indie fest, but because they're making a pseudo sequel to it using the same style. That is going to be an RPG, so I picked up the No Existence of You and Me.
Yeah, I'm so excited for the RPG as well, and also bought the visual novel recently.
Yeah, and then we discussed this about our next Kemco thing, because there's a new Kemco game that came out, which is done by a new developer called Vanguard.
Newish.
I mean, it's pretty new. They've only had two other games, and they both came out last year. So I would say that's new. I wouldn't even say newish. They're new. So
you
I
make
picked
three
up their
games in a year.
I mean that's actually pretty slow for Kemco publishing. So I picked up Dragon Takers and Astral Takers.
These were dungeon crawlers?
No, they're RPG Maker, but they have instead of the sort of tactical grids like the Hitmaker ones, these are actually like dungeon crawlery styled battles, or more traditional like JRPG battles.
Okay, gotcha.
So I haven't given most of these games a try, but that is what I picked up.
When I saw the screenshots, I thought that I assumed because of the way the layout was, I assumed they were dungeon crawlers.
Yeah, no, they are not actually dungeon crawlers. It's just like an old Dragon Quest style combat system.
I see.
Where you stare at your enemies. Stare them in the face.
Make eye contact to assume dominance.
So so that was it for me. What about you, Ryan?
On my end, I added to my Dragon Horde of backlogs. So rather than get too deep into that, I thought I would share an older story, but still involving receiving gifts. I've kind of pieced together that my dad loves hiding things in plain sight to the point where I'm sure he giggles like incessantly about it, thinking back and when it happened. The Christmas version of this story, though, a game he had got me, which happened to be Illusions of Gaia, wasn't quite in the store for Christmas. So at some point between Boxing Day, which is probably when he got it, and you know, late January, early February, when we took down the tree, he just took the cart and put it in the tree.
Okay.
And it took until we went to take the tree down, where I'm like, what? Where did this? Because just we were taking the ornaments down, and suddenly my hand SNES cartridge falls into my hand from the tree.
I'm more concerned. So the only thing I'm concerned about with this story, by the way, that's actually a good story, is the fact that you didn't take the tree down till February.
This is like January. It was a lazy year, or he wanted to see how long it took for me to find it, and that's how he convinced my mom to keep it up for so long.
My question on this Is this a like a fake tree, by the way?
Yes.
Oh, okay, okay. So, now it makes sense. My parents, yeah, for the longest time were like, must have real trees. They finally get a fake one just because of my mom's MS, to make it easier for her. But
Fake tree, we hung all the ornaments up. They like the lights for a little while. Sometimes especially when I was younger, would leave it up longer if we have, you know, family visiting and halfway through January that we haven't seen in a while. That comes. Still have the holiday feel, or like I said, this year that my dad just wanted to see how long it took me to find the game hidden in the tree.
See, I feel like that would work even better nowadays because we have Christmas ornaments that are game cartridges now.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a Legend of Zelda one and a Sonic one.
Yeah. This wasn't Christmas, but my favorite of all of those still was he had bought me Final Fantasy Tactics. And he put it in like four games down with my PlayStation games under the cabinet. So one day I was like, oh, I've been playing this for a while. And I just go to look and game's there. So he hid the game with the other games.
By the way, that Zelda ornament you could kill somebody with. it is heavy.
Is it made from gold?
Yeah, I mean, not real gold, but yeah, it's made from metal. It's the gold-plated Zelda card. It's about 50% of the scale.
Ocarina of Concussion it is.
I'm sad that they haven't done a Link to the Past one. And the console ornament this year from Hallmark was, I think, a 360, which I didn't get because I don't have a lot of nostalgia for the 360. But anyway.
Well, that's because it only had like six RPGs.
Yeah.
Blue Dragon.
That was one of the six.
Well, Lost Odyssey.
Hey.
Let's see. Lost Odyssey, Tales of Vesperia, Blue Dragon.
I got three more. Yeah.
Operation Darkness.
Mm.
Yep, that was one of the three. I have two more.
What was that one that was going to get remade but then didn't?
Star Ocean.
Oh.
Did you say Infinite Undiscovery?
Undiscovery.
We should say that. Yep.
There are six.
I got two more still.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
Spectral Force 3, and it's called Set Saga. I think it's 3. Spectral Force.
Yeah. Yeah. Spectral Force 3, called Set Saga. And there's one more. One more. The one where you were Internal Sonata. That's it.
Yeah.
So we were off.
Technically, if we're including multi-platform, I bought Vandal Hearts 3 on the 360 shop. So,
Vandal Hearts 3 isn't available at all anymore, so I wasn't going to count that one. But I do own it. I don't know if my 360 still works though.
I didn't count Star Ocean or Eternal Sonata because those eventually came to PS3.
Mm-hmm. Same thing with Enchanted Arms.
Technically, Vesperia. It did too, but we didn't get that one.
Yeah, we did.
Not the original PS3 version of Vesperia. That was Japan only.
No, we got the enhanced edition, which is which if I ever play it again, I'm going to play it in Japanese.
Are you talking about the one that released recently?
Yeah, it's still Vesperia, and we still got it in the US.
I'm talking back in the day.
Yeah. Well, the one we got recently is based off of that one that came off for the PS3, though.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I know we got it eventually. It's just back in the day. I didn't count that one because we never got it.
Fair enough. Yeah. All right.
I mean, we did technically get it. It just took a lot longer.
Yeah. Okay.
The reason we didn't get it for the PS3 is either because of contracts or because they didn't want to do the redubbing for the new lines. But they ended up doing the redubbing for the new lines with new voice actors, and it sounds like ass now.
Aww.
That's because they kept the old dub too. So you have the old dub, new dub mixed together, and that is issues because some of the characters just don't sound quite right enough.
Troy Baker is Yuri, and I don't understand why they didn't get Matt Mercer to replace him since they sound almost the same.
Well, they The issue, so I, one of the issues is could have been, and this is something someone else brought up somewhere I read, I think it was on our Discord, because Chaos has been playing it, is because of the fact that since both of them are SAG, if they were trying to keep it non-union, they went with someone who was, you know, not SAG eligible, at least at that time. That is one possibility. I know Matt Mercer has come out and said he doesn't like taking those roles because of the fact he does know he sounds like Troy Baker and he doesn't like being referred to as Darstroy Troy Baker or whatever.
Timu Troy Baker.
Yeah. So they may have tried to get Matt Mercer and he turned it down. I don't know if they did or didn't, but he may have turned it down because of that very reason.
That's true. I just...
It's not fair to Matt Mercer to make that distinction.
I know it's not fair. It's just, as a casting director, if you're not going to get the original guy, you could at least get somebody that sounds somewhat similar.
And they did, but it was just off enough. Because I think they have different pacings that it's noticeable, and I think that's where the issue is.
This is the first time I've ever heard that, and did not think they sounded similar. So go figure. Learned something new today.
What, Matt Mercer and Troy Baker?
Yep. I've been able to piece it together. Which one's which?
Well, they were both Kanji in Persona 4.
You got all the lemons.
I got all the lemons. Gambling's fun, guys. And it's much more interesting than voice actor contract speculation.
Yeah. There, as I said, there could be a lot of different reasons. All I know is that they didn't hire a lot of the same voice actors from the original version to the other version. And it just, yeah. Anyways, anybody else have stories from Christmas or holidays?
Not anything interesting.
I think we're out. Yeah. I went to a hockey game up in Canada. It's like hockey here, but there was poutine.
Was it
served.
More violent?
No, they had poutine at the concession stands.
Oh, okay. Did it get violent?
No, they wouldn't let them get violent. I was very disappointed. I'm like, come on, let them fight. And Andy yelled at me.
Andy.
Also, it's like a bridge league between, high school, college, and the pros. So it's like, these are all young kids. You're not supposed to let them beat each other up like that.
Yeah, no.
Young adults, so, I guess.
Yeah. So Kelly,
pass each other, children. No,
so Kelly, I think it's that time.
Is it news time? So I said before I got Trails in the Sky, the first for Christmas, the remake. Mm-hmm. They've come out and announced that Trails in the Sky second chapter has been announced for fall of this year. And I think we need to make them wait 7 years for the authentic experience.
Ever.
See, for those that don't know, when the PSP versions of these games came out, you know, you have Trails in the Sky that ends on a massive cliffhanger. And then it took quite a while for the second game to come out, to the point where I had played both games on my Vita. Because it had taken that long.
Yeah. I like that they don't take 7 years anymore.
I'm being very sarcastic. I'm glad that people aren't going to have to endure this just mind-blowing cliffhanger and having to wait for so long.
Yeah, I'm actually very interested on if they've gotten some pushback, because I don't know if you saw it, Kelly, but they came out saying, you know, they used some AI in like early production. So
I didn't see that.
Like to fill in voices or what?
I don't know where they specifically are using it. All I know is that they specifically came out and said they do use AI to help speed up production.
Well, that doesn't tell you anything. That doesn't mean it's bad or good. It doesn't tell you anything.
It was soon after the Larian conversations, as well as when they talked about Clair Obscur. So it was like
what do they mean by this stuff? Like, are they generating art or voices? In which case, maybe not so great. Are they just doing some code completion
stand
stuff.
Stand in visuals.
Like, oh, stand in visuals. Stand in visuals. So they are doing art. That, see,
from Larian, I heard that it was just doing, basically doing the dreamcasting phase or the concept
phase. Which is great until it makes it into the final product somehow.
Oh, right. Sorry, I got it wrong. I believe it was for like presentational aspects to fill in, like to make things more easily able to see what the final picture could look like.
Yeah.
I believe it's been a couple of weeks since I saw the article.
I mean, it's basically the same thing that Sandfall was doing for Clair Obscur, was supposed to be stand-in visuals, you know, while they create something, so that way they have an idea of what they need to put in instead of just putting, like, you know, the white and blue boxes that we used to see in World of Warcraft.
So, but did they get rid of those?
Sandfall eventually did after some...
Wait, so it made it into the production release, though, is what you're saying?
Yeah, because they forgot.
Oh, no. See, that's what
you're doing. There's one newspaper post on a wall in the first town, and that was stand-in, and they had to patch it out.
Okay, one... I don't care about one newspaper post. Good God.
You know what, guys? Yeah. I eventually muted the word AI on my Blue Sky, and I am so much better for it because I am tired of hearing people bitch about it.
People are very passionate on both sides to the point where it's like, I don't want to listen to anybody.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's like the points have been made and I don't need to listen to this anymore.
If it's not costing people jobs, I don't care at this point. I really don't. But I digress. Anybody excited for this? I've still got to play the first game.
I'm very excited for it, and because I played and beat the first one, I didn't realize that it wasn't common knowledge already. So when the announcement came out, I was like, oh, somehow this wasn't mentioned, because they had the everyone's returning in Trails in the Sky second chapter as like end credit, like after the end credits. So they had a trailer for it. But I guess it didn't become common knowledge until they officially announced, yeah, this trailer was real.
I mean, it also depends. Like, I haven't even picked up the first chapter. I do plan to actually pick it up because I think I will be more likely to play it in this manner. Because I've tried playing Trails in the Sky, you know, the original version. And I will say I have issues just getting into that battle system.
Yeah, I've heard that this one improves on it in every way. And by the way, if you haven't played the first game, do not watch the trailer because it does have spoilers.
Yeah. It's like it even starts with like spoiler warnings.
Yeah.
So. Like, is there any part of the trailer that's okay? And I'm like, I can't find it. It's all about the story stuff from the first one.
Yeah, very hyped. Yay, it's coming, and I know people are very excited for
when this. Is it coming here?
Fall.
It's worldwide. I think they
worldwide
said
a simultaneous release. They're starting to do hopefully that more frequently now.
Is it sad I'm wanting the third one to come out soon too? Just because I want to be able to play that one on a console.
Are they going to do? Are they going to do all the little interstitial ones that aren't as important as the others?
I would be happy if they redid Crossbell.
Okay.
I have heard a rumor that supposedly they have said they are going to be doing the Crossbell, but I do not have confirmation on that. So I cannot, I'm not going to say that is true or not. I just have heard a rumor that supposedly they have said they will be doing Crossbell as well.
And are we getting these at the expense of not getting new games?
I mean, they're still working on new.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's, again, they've said that they are using, you know, AI to try and help speed up production. So because that was one of the big things with Falcom, because it is a small, pretty small team.
Are they doing the remakes in-house then? I figured they'd be outsourced.
They might be partially outsourced, but.
I mean, I don't know. I'm just surprised. That's all.
I don't know the full details behind their production, so. I'm not going to speculate if they are fully in-house or not fully in-house. All I know is because Falcom is a smaller team usually, it does take them a hot minute to get their games out usually. Not saying they're not quality games, though. Anyways, let us move on.
Yeah.
Has anybody here played Dave the Diver?
I've installed it a billion times and never started it.
I've at least started it. And I played the collab with Nike.
It's got Jungle DLC that is coming out. Also a mobile version and a physical release. That could be exciting. I still need to play it.
Yep.
I want to play it because there's a cute tuxedo cat in it that's actually my PSN icon.
Hmm.
I don't know if you guys do that.
I did not.
I did not either.
And I love tuxies. Speaking of DLC, we've got the Fantasy Life I Girl who Steals Time's free DLC, which is out right now.
Why aren't you playing it, Kelly?
Because I have other stuff to play.
Kelly,
I've got too much
Fantasy
stuff to play.
Life.
I know.
Is this the update that people should be asking me why I'm not playing it? Because there was one that came out for this that's like they added a roguelike mode.
Yeah, that's what this update is the
roguelike mode.
Oh, I see.
This is your update.
You go to sleep and then it's a roguelike?
Yeah.
Nice.
Basically.
All right.
I'm sure that there's like new recipes and like rare materials and stuff you can get from the rogue mode. I think I ended up having to take it off my Steam Deck just to make space.
Disappointing.
Yep. Why is that disappointing?
I don't know. I'm just teasing.
Ah.
Care. You play what you want, Kelly. I like teasing you. Like, this is the only game you will play for the rest of time.
You need someone else to be like you, right, Chris?
Yeah.
I'm not you, Chris.
Like hey now, hey now. I'm just saying this game's supposed to be addictive and people like to play it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. It's just I have so much other stuff I want to play. I felt guilty like even going back to Power Wash Simulator because it's like, should I really play this 100 hours of washing things? But
is Fantasy Life online co-op?
Yeah.
Oh, David, we should play Fantasy Life later.
And the other interesting thing is that they did some quality of life updates, including letting you have 10 people in your town instead of 6, which was like, I was disappointed that you could only have 6 people in your town because I had a bunch of characters that I liked using, and you increase your friendship levels faster if they can have a house.
But I do know that would help my friendship level if someone got me a house.
Yeah, we need to make that RP Gamer compound that we were talking about.
Yeah.
In Minnesota, where all the RP Gamers are going to move. But what else have we got? Gachiakuta, the game announced?
It is based off of a manga series that also has a 24-episode anime adaptation that was produced by Bones.
Great show.
Okay, he's seen it. I have not.
Yep. It's at first glance, it's going to be like, oh, it's one of the characters are edgy. How they act is a bit edgy, but there's a lot of depth to how they tell. I've only seen the animes. So there's a lot of depth to how they portray the characters, and I'm definitely watching a season 2. My only worry is I can't. I tried thinking of a video game adaptation, particularly RPG, and I can't think of a good one in the 3D era that's actually good. So I want this to do well.
Is it an isekai?
No.
Okay.
There's a world above this trash world they're showing if you're on stream right now. Basically, there's a trash world and a world above. The people in the world above just toss their trash off, but it's also where if someone's like commuted of any type of crime, they kick them off. And the main character is someone who's in the upper world, gets booted out for a crime they're falsely committed for, and lands in this trash world. And they become bonded with items that are like thrown away or otherwise might not be something people would normally bond with. Like there's a character that bonds with their comb and is able to use electric powers by combing their hair.
Okay, that explains the guy with the umbrella then.
Yes. So and there's usually a backstory with these items where it's like touching how did you come across this umbrella type thing. So it isn't just throwaway aspects, it's bonds with their weapons. And the protagonist is able to bond with multiple weapons, so hopefully they integrate that into the game so you don't just have one combat style, you can try doing multiple combat styles.
Trying to think of what common everyday object I would bond with in my house. Maybe my coffee maker.
Cell phone.
Yeah,
that's portable very competent, right?
I mean, I'd say my Switch, but that's a little too on the nose.
Mm. You need one game machine that's not special, so you could just relax and chill a bit.
That should be our question of the week. What common everyday object would you bond with?
Yeah.
For an anime.
My underwear. Like, no. If you're bonded to your underwear, take a shower. All right. What? Okay. They're getting more Dragon Quest X. Oh, wait. First of all, that last game, we don't know when it's coming out.
Yeah, we don't know when it's coming out. I did find a different article because ours mentioned it was coming to PC. I did find an article on a different site. It is specifically going to be, at least from what I saw, PC on Steam.
Okay.
Because that does matter these days because I have found that, because we've talked about that Arknights game a few times, it is coming to PC. It is specifically coming out on the Epic Store.
Hmm.
So knowing which PC client it's coming out for is a thing now.
I don't care. The only thing that annoys me is it makes it harder to put things on my Steam Deck if it's not on Steam.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah.
That's really where I'm at. I don't care what store you're on. I like having multiple stores and no monopolies. I want competition, Tam. Like, I'd rather have competition than no competition. So.
Yeah. Understandable.
Yeah. What do we got? Latest Dragon Quest X expansion announced for Japan. They're getting more? How? We don't even have it at all, and they're getting more?
Because it's a...
It's a Wii game! How is it still going? Oh, okay. The Wii versions are gone.
Yeah.
It's PC, PS4, and Switch now. Okay. Well, there you go. Oh, it's not even revealed what it's going to be. They're just getting an expansion. So get excited. Another expansion for a game they're never going to let you play. Yay. Are there good, like, fan translation, like, VPN guides and stuff for that? I don't know.
Talk to Platy.
Platy, no, okay.
Yeah, Platy. He put it, like, 100 hours in the offline.
He was able to play 100 hours, so there's been enough translation for it.
Probably talked about it on this show before. I just can't remember. Okay. Here's another Steam release for you, Tam, then. Granblue Fantasy.
Yeah, that's the gacha game.
Oh, never mind.
So, I just remember reading about some of the people who were frustrated by this because they had played the unofficial versions, and they're...
Well, there's also like, an official PC version on the browser. So, like, you could play it in English already, but it was weird.
That won't cross over with the Steam version.
Oh, great. So if you've been playing, you're stuck. Awesome.
Yeah, because it was all unofficial, so...
Oh, it wasn't official?
No.
I thought the browser stuff was official.
No, the browser stuff was not official.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I misunderstood.
Yeah, so that's the reason why this is now being...
officially released on Steam, but not on the mobile.
It's currently available mobile? In English and Japanese on PC via browser, iOS, and Android through the iOS
All right.
and Android.
Let me walk me through.
You're not officially available on the Western app stores.
Right.
So they were basically workarounds to play them via these ways in English.
Yeah.
But they were not officially in English.
Yeah, whatever. Like, if I'm going to do the work and bring it out in English for real now, why would I choose PC Steam instead of iOS and Android. Aren't there more users on iOS and Android, like for people who play gacha games and throw money at them, than on Steam?
Because anymore, a lot of people want to play these on PC because they run better.
All right. I mean, I just didn't think I thought you would still reach more people the other way is all I'm thinking.
And they're not swapping out their PC every couple of years like their phone.
Well, I mean, but your account still moves over on your phone.
Not always.
All right.
Yeah, this has actually been a big thing
Think of a single mobile game where I'm not tying it to an account so I can restore it on a new device. I always do that.
I lost all my progress on Angry Birds multiple times.
Okay, that's not a gacha game in a traditional sense. And it's really old. Yeah. I'm just saying, a more modern game, they've figured out all this account stuff and linking.
Yeah. Well, again, in this particular case, it was they were available in English, but they weren't officially available on the Western App Store. So that people were playing them via unofficial means. So that's sort of the issue. Although the fact this is a 12-year-old gacha game is pretty amazing.
Yeah, they don't last that long usually, do they?
No.
Especially when they first come out, you don't go. Well, you know, it's been out for 12 years. Let's bring it.
How old is Genshin Impact at this point?
I want to say good five or six.
Forget Genshin Impact. What's the one before Genshin Impact?
Honkai Impact 3rd.
Yeah, that one. How long has that been out? Because that's still going.
Yeah, that's still going.
Isn't there more to Genshin than just fight?
No, not for Genshin. Honkai, yes. But not Genshin Impact was completely ground up original, I believe.
I'm sorry, what?
2016 was Honkai 3rd Impact's first release.
So that's 10 years.
China. Yeah. North America got in 2018.
Yeah. Well, whatever. Okay.
Not big or fancy anymore, but I've definitely been playing a few gachas since before 2016 that are still going.
My understanding is Grand Blue Fantasy is very big, or at least it was. I don't assume it still is.
It has a fighting game and it has that offline game, so.
Yeah.
When I was in Japan, I couldn't go anywhere without seeing Grand Blue stuff everywhere.
Yeah, Grand Blue is very big.
Is it good?
apparently, if it's been going that doesn't years,
mean no, it doesn't. No. That doesn't mean it's good.
And I have the fighting game and the offline action game, and both of those aren't too bad.
Relink is really good, but when it comes to 12-year-old gacha games, try asking someone that plays Fate Grand Order if they like it or if they just are aware of it being part of their life now.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Fate Grand Order is more like, I am playing this as a lifestyle and not because I enjoy it.
Like a gacha game gets to that point, that's when I like kind of force myself to stop, because it's like I can't let this just be a daily chore that I'm doing just because I've convinced myself I have to.
I have stopped many gacha games because of that.
I was getting to that point with Uma Musume. That's why I haven't played it for months now, because I can't just keep doing this to keep up with stat growth so that I can be better in an event 2 years from now. This is stupid. give me more to do that's useful.
I mean, that's why I stopped Record Keeper when I did, because it was like there was way too many confusing ways to upgrade your character, and it became so overwhelming that I just couldn't.
I mean, that was the issue with almost any of the Square names, though.
Well, yeah. That's why I haven't touched Ever Crisis.
Opera Omnia was amazing.
I've heard Reverse 1999 is also really good. By the way, I shocked someone this week in telling them that, yes, Rovio, speaking of Angry Birds, is owned by Sega.
Yeah.
Weird.
One of the soundtracks that you pick up in Pirate Yakuza is the Angry Birds soundtrack.
And that they've owned it for a couple of years now.
Well, and then there's a new Angry Birds movie coming out this year, apparently.
Yep.
Thanks, Blueberry, in the chat.
You know, the original Angry Birds movie isn't terrible.
Okay. Well, they're up to the third one now, so they're probably all bad at this point, right?
Yeah. I wouldn't say they're bad. They're just stupid. There's nothing wrong with bad, stupid movies that can be enjoyable, but there's the difference between bad that is bad and then bad that's just amusingly fun.
So is this like my White Knight Chronicles kind of mid?
I mean, how much plot can you get out of throwing birds at pigs?
If you're going into Angry Birds movies trying to look at the philosophical condition of the human being, you probably picked the wrong movie.
Well, yeah, because it's birds, not humans. Duh.
Human condition, though. Birds can be used to...
Oh, I see. You want to do fancy analogy and allegorical stuff. Okay. I don't have the media literacy for that.
You need chai tea and a circle of 15 people to talk about this.
So I'm trying to watch a Grand Blue Fantasy video on YouTube from the Japanese account to be like, show me some gameplay. And it's just a 2-hour thing where all they're doing is showing merch and then occasional, like, actually 2 hours. It's a 9-hour stream? What in the world?
Accurate.
Yeah. And it's just the Japanese, I wish we had this level of support for games in the West, because like I love these like 9-hour developer just specials of like, here, spend a day with us and we'll have a whole bunch of different variety content about this game throughout the day. We don't get any of that. But
even Opera Omnia, well, Opera Omnia had that on both sides. The English version was about 2 hours.
Yeah.
I used to love watching the live stream on Square Enix.
Was it as produced as like the Japanese version with like voice actors coming in and merch all over?
The Japanese side, definitely. The English side, it was two guys that worked for the PR department.
That's what I thought. I want the English side to get that support that the Japanese side or the Asian or like China or wherever the game is made gets.
You should see the ones for Nikkei between the Japanese and the English. So the English ones have like they you know the characters on screen.
Yeah.
Doing the event, whereas like the Japanese ones, especially when it gets to the dev side, has like actual cosplayers come in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah. I mean, at least to have, you know, the character arts and the live models, you know, with the characters talking back and forth, that's actually still kind of immersive.
So I'm old. Do you remember when you were younger, assuming you're my age, and like good RPGs were like just locked to Japan? They were never going to be translated. They were never coming out here. And you always felt like there was this aspect of Japanese game culture that you're just not allowed to have unless you move to Japan and learn Japanese.
I totally remember that.
I feel like that's moved into the gacha territory. It's like the gacha games now have all those cultural trappings, and the regular games everyone gets and it's equal everywhere. And it's like, this is where that unattainable grasping piece of elusive gaming culture that I can't get as a basically a weeb nerd in America. I can't get that in because it's not in my language and not in my culture and not produced for my time zone and all that. Except it's for a game that's just trying to exploit your wallet. So like as soon as I get down to the end of that thought, I'm like, well, maybe that's for the best.
By
the way, I'm going to tell you guys now, I will be playing Grand Blue.
Okay. I mean, I'll probably boot it up just because I'm curious.
Gotta see what it's like, right?
It.
Yeah.
But one, I'm not chomping at the bit to play the latest gacha crap from Japan.
What about 12-year-old gacha crap from Japan?
Yeah. But, you know, since fan translations have become more ubiquitous, I'm noticing that a lot of those that untouched SNES and PS1 stuff was not as good as we thought it was.
No, we see that every week on here on twitch.tv/RPGamer twice a week with Scar's Retro Wheel, because man, he is playing through some really bad RPGs these days.
Roughly half of those look more interesting than Chrono Trigger to me. So
I felt that way when I booted up Live a Live for the first time, and it's like, finally, we can play this legally. This isn't that good at all.
I don't know that everyone agrees on that one, but yeah.
I mean,
it's not a bad game, but it's very obtuse.
That was my first impression. Once I kind of got into it and and got used to its quirks, it was fine. But I wouldn't have been into that crap in 1995.
I will tell you, I actually tried playing the fan translation of that back in the day, and I did not enjoy it. The remake is actually much better.
Yeah, though, yeah, the remake fixed a lot of the pacing issues. But I can't imagine anybody liking that in 1995. We didn't even like Earthbound in 1995, or whenever that came out. It took like years of that being a cult classic for people to finally appreciate
it. I liked Earthbound when it came out because I was reading Nintendo Power, and it was advertised pretty heavily in there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, part of the issue, though, was their campaign. It's like, this game stinks!
Yeah! Like, I remember getting an air freshener for that game. Yeah. It's so
it
silly.
It was like, their marketing for the game was kind of bad. I think that's part of the reason why it was not well-liked, is because people saw those ads and were like, oh, why am I going to be buying this?
I've learned about a lot of 2D platformers that were on the PS1 that looked pretty cool back in the day that we never got, because we didn't want 2D back then. We wanted 3D.
Well, that was part of the head guys of Sony being.
Well, yeah, buttholes. But that was some of the zeitgeist back then too.
True. True.
I didn't know zeitgeist till 2006, so.
Should we?
Anyway, shall we move on? If we still got a ton of stories.
Yeah, all right, let's go.
What else have we got? Sword and Fairy 4 remake has been announced.
I have heard a lot of conflict on this already, because I don't know if so. Then a lot of it was comparison. So yeah, they've announced this remake of Sword and Fairy 4, and they're like, they're remaking it to kind of look like, as far as the battle system goes, maybe a very popular game from last year.
It's Which legally one? Distinct, but if you hit pause on it, you'll see it immediately.
Like what? Which game?
Does the screenshots look like Clair Obscur to me?
It's Clair Obscur.
Okay. It's Clair Obscur, yeah.
Okay.
The UI and gameplay of it, it's like, it's not Clair. What are you talking about?
So it's an Unreal game, and they all look the same?
It's more the fact that they're making it specifically to look very
similar. Actually, I shouldn't say
similar.
That. I don't think Clair Obscur is Unreal, is it?
It is.
Oh, it is. Okay.
It is Unreal, yeah.
Anyway, this looks like Where Winds Meet to me from a cultural setting, right?
Yeah, culturally, yes, but like menuing?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I gotta get the,
even that opening shot with that city.
Well, I mean, if it's turn-based, then that's immediately different, right? So,
yeah, it's Sword and Fairy's turn-based.
Okay. So this is, they're remaking Sword and Fairy 4. Have they remade the first three already?
To be honest, I don't know.
Me neither. Possibly. Are they worth playing? Do we need a where to start article for Sword and Fairy?
Sword and Fairy 7 was covered by us, I believe, and okay. 2. So.
I mean, this looks beautiful. I don't know. If it's good, that's great.
They look good, yes. Yeah. Let's see. I'm searching.
I have no idea.
The soundtracks are on Steam.
there's so many soundtracks on Steam. That doesn't help at all.
Yeah, so it doesn't.
If they're there, you can't get them in the U.S. store.
Yeah, they're not on the
yeah,
got the it. Only 7.
Okay. That's I'm copying Clair Obscur, which is copying Persona 5. Got it. Perfect. Yeah. Yep.
Okay, Sword and Fairy 6 is on Steam. Cuz I own it. Okay, they have a bundle. Let's see. Yeah, so you can get at least 4, 5, the prequel of 5 and 6 on Steam. So I don't think they've redone 1 through 3.
If this is the problem with games in 2026 is that they all look like Persona 5, oh man, what a terrible problem for me to have to deal with.
or man.
It's one thing to look like Persona 5, it's another thing to play like Persona 5.
I'm just saying, like, if people have got 5. Style, or if they're influenced by the high style games, like, I'm okay with that.
But is it style over substance?
Well, of course it is.
Say, getting it.
Well, We'll find out when we get a review.
There's a reason why certain games go up as people going, everyone needs to try this, and other versions of it don't make it that high up.
I mean, the fact that it's a remake of, and they didn't start with the first one, means they probably picked this one for a reason, because it might be one of the better ones, and well, we'll see. When we get it? When do we get it? Do we get it? We get this game?
Yes. To be honest, I don't know. I've been reading more of the summaries than the...
Planned to release on PC and unspecified consoles, so who knows?
English version is set to follow.
Yeah, they're going to have an English trailer, which I assume means that they're at least committing to a Southeast Asia English release, if not a Western release, so we'll see. Okay, what's next, Kelly?
Sorry, Vaughn was letting me know that there's a new Silent Hill movie coming out, apparently.
Oh, neato.
In 2 weeks. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I've totally forgot about that. 20 years almost to the month of Vaughn and I's first date, which was Silent Hill, the original movie. Mm. Not a great date movie.
Mm.
But we endured.
Code Vein 2 gets walkthrough trailer and character creation demo. Bandai Namco released an 8-minute trailer of Code Vein 2, giving a quick walkthrough of its gameplay. The company also announced a character creation demo to be released a week ahead of the game. So this allows you to probably, you know, create the specific look for your character for when you go to play it.
And for the record, because this will be in a couple of weeks, if I happen to be on that cast, I am not downloading a character creator.
Understandable. I did hear some controversy with this game this week, too. Is that they've changed one of the terminologies for the Japanese side of it from what it was before to something else. I forget the specifics. It was very, but they left it the same from the first game to the second game internationally. It's just in Japan, they've changed the term from the first game to the second game. Get that one.
What term?
The vampires. They changed the term for vampires to something else, or they changed it to vampires. I forget the specifics, but it's only in Japan, so you don't have to worry about the change of the term if you're not in Japan.
In Japan, where vampires hop?
No, not the term.
No, I know. I was trying to make a joke.
Oh, sorry. Well, that's a Chinese term anyways. The Jingxi are Chinese vampires.
Yay? Nay? Should I care?
It doesn't affect us, so I don't think it matters.
They changed it from revenants to vampires.
That's it. Cool. Yeah, in the Japanese version, though. So it stays revenant in like North America and outside of Japan. But in Japan, they are no longer called revenants. They are called now vampires.
Do they sparkle?
Probably not.
Okay,
Will there be a boss named Edward?
I hope so. Dragon Quest VII Reimagined demo releasing this week. So this came out. Is this one of the demos you tried there, Dalendar?
Yep. I thought I wouldn't be the only one, though.
Time to slime, according to Platy, is 40 minutes, which is a speed run compared to the PS1 version.
I did it in 90 minutes.
You did it?
Yeah, I played it in 90 minutes.
Hold on. You know what we're saying there, though, right, Tam? Not that you finished the demo in 90 minutes, but it was 90 minutes till you killed your first monster?
No,
That's what time to slime is. How long till you get to kill something?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, it took me maybe an hour.
Yeah, okay.
But that's me. So
I had to break my rule for this demo because I normally have for this play 30 minutes. And I had to go about 40, 45 minutes before I fought something. So I'm like, I have to at least play a bit of the combat to try talking about it because...
Now, I will admit, like, my 90-minute time frame is me skipping all the cutscenes.
Yeah. I still talk to every NPC, and I had to laugh that Maribel got mad at me for talking to them.
But
so, like, this is anti-Trails. They don't want me talking to people.
The original
this Dragon guy's head Quest creeps 7. Me out. The guy in red.
The original Dragon Quest VII is one of the worst paced games I've ever played.
Yeah. It's almost like it was released in the English without being finished.
Yeah.
Well, oh, right. That's because it was.
The 3DS version is also still a slog.
Mm.
It's a little bit better. You're not as lost or left out to dry, but it's still...
And Kiefer has always looked like that, apparently. We actually had this discussion on Wheels Discord.
Mm.
So, yeah, Kiefer has always looked...
It's like someone weird. Took Steiner's head, threw it on a child, and said, here's a character for you. Like, no, stop it.
I've never heard that description before.
It's not quite accurate, but it's the best thing I could come up with in a minute.
It's accurate enough.
That actually is pretty accurate, I feel. But, yeah, I'm actually very excited for this. I'm actually going to be pre-ordering this next paycheck, I feel.
I pre-ordered it on Wednesday night when I was talking about it with Plotty.
What is this out on? What do I get to play
Switch,
on?
Everything.
Switch 1, Switch 2, PlayStation, yeah. Steam.
Does this come in a Game Pass or anything, or do I have to pay money
Xbox,
for this?
Windows.
Yeah.
I mean, the demo's free, but like, are there any deals for the full version? Of course not. It's Square Enix. What am I even asking that for?
And there is no Switch 1 to Switch 2 upgrade.
What?
Yeah.
What?
The page says make sure you know what version you're buying.
What?
I ended up going with the Switch 1 version so that I could have it on the cart.
Ellie.
Yeah?
That's a mistake. Come on.
Why?
Because it's going to perform like crap and you know it.
It'll be fine if I'm playing it on a Switch 2.
I'm getting it on Steam, so.
The only reason I say there's a chance it would play well on the Switch is I've mentioned on this cast before, my laptop is close to a potato, and it played the game perfectly fine.
Oh, all right, then.
Like the demo, I should say.
All right, yeah.
I am avoiding key cards if I don't have to. I'm getting Final Fantasy VII Remake Integrate and Monster Hunter Stories, which are both going to be key cards. But other than
you
that...
You might want to check to see if one of the other regions is getting it as not a key card then.
I'll have to see, but I'm not going to hold my breath, and I also don't want to wait forever.
Just get it digitally then. That way at least then you know what it is, and it's not confusing about, do I have to remember that this is a key card?
Well, yeah, but I also... Well, I say that Vaughn's getting that for his Final Fantasy VII for his birthday because he knows I asked him about it. But
yeah, so co-op action RPG Goblins Die announced, demo available.
Oh, developer on the Dragon Quest.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. That goes on to the next demo.
I thought we were.
Wait, did you play the demo? Tell us about the demo.
We all played the demo except for you.
I didn't.
Oh, I thought Kelly did too. My apologies.
I played it vicariously through Body.
Well, Delinar and I both played it.
Demo's tiny. It downloaded fast.
Yeah, it's only. Skipped everything. I did it in 90 minutes.
2 gigs.
The demo itself, I've heard it is about 2 to 3 hours.
It doesn't go too far into it. I made it to. The first fight I've happened to really enjoy. For me, I'm pretty much a Dragon Quest newbie. So I looked at the visuals and went, this reminds me of Fantasian, which made me very happy because I really like that diorama art style they have, especially for the world map parts. And I just got hung up slightly on a word choice of Kiefer's because I legitimately had to look it up. And he said, hopefully they don't notice me scappered. And I'm like, what? And I looked it up like, oh, you're just using a weird fancy term for running away.
Yep.
Because he ran away from the palace.
That's a common thing with the English localization is they have some interesting English Scottish dialects.
Yeah, so that's still there for everyone.
The demo cuts off right before you unlock the second island.
Okay.
So that is where the demo stops.
Unlimited time?
Up until that point, yes.
Okay.
So there is one thing I've noted we've been discussing on our Discord in regards to this demo is you actually see your vocation levels now and the points and how many points you earn per battle towards the vocation levels. The vocations being the job system.
Cool.
The one thing is it seems to, at least in the demo, hard cut off at 4 stars. Because I forget if they're 8 or 10 stars off the top of my head. I don't have it open. But I think it used to be 8 stars. But yeah, you get these vocation levels and they stop at 4 stars in the demo. So I don't know if that is a specific thing for the demo or if it is, you know, because I was fighting weak monsters at that point. Because that was a thing where if you fought monsters too weak, you would not gain vocation points towards them. But it was all like a secret back end system that you didn't know how many points you were getting or, you know, if things were too weak or too strong. Every battle will tell you if you're getting vocation points now, no matter what. But it does seem to have a stopping point in the demo of 4 stars, and you won't go past that. So you can't like just grind your vocation up to max before the end of the demo.
Yeah, because back in the day when I played it, I had an old iPhone that I used as basically an iPhone Touch, and I had downloaded a counter app so that I could keep track of my my vocation points when I was leveling up. That was not fun.
No. The 3DS version, I think, made it a little easier on that. Again, that's how come I think this is specific for the demo, because they didn't want people to just be over, you know, have the full range of skills, because you get skills every level with the vocations. And the vocations actually even had a little subset that during battles, sometimes they would get like a special ability from the vocation, which was, I thought, really cool. Kiefer's like made him more like deal more damage and also have a higher chance to crit, but he would actually lose some defense. And then the heroes allowed everybody to ignore like a one attack. So it was pretty cool to see that, you know, because that is something new to those vocations, whereas before they were just, you know, way to basically get skills. Yeah, I think they were tied to the tensions, Hair Frog. But they were specific to the vocations, too. So there's a lot to unpack. Like, Monster Hearts now are not, like, random drops. They are either tied to specific monsters, or you can find them, a couple of them were in chests. Like, I found the slime one in a chest. I found the golem one in a chest. So that's also new, instead of having to be like and they're equipped like accessories. So I'm very, very excited for this one, because Dragon Quest 7, I think, is one of the underdogs of the Dragon Quest series as a whole. Uh-huh. You know, it's not one of that everyone kind of loves. This one and 6, I think, are the two least favorites. 7 mostly because of how long it drags on.
Yeah, 7 was bloated, but smelled like a slog. I don't mind 6 as much, but...
6 is a slog too, though.
Yeah.
Like, 8's a slog, but it's a fun slog. I like it. You know, it's good story. Whereas 7 and 8 or 7 and 6 just take forever, it felt. So, anyways, you got any more on this one, Dalinar?
I have very few memories. I played Dragon Quest 7 on the PS1. One of the things I remember was blindly looking around for pieces. And in the demo, I noticed they kind of had, like, you could see it on the mini-map almost, and you can look for hints. So even if they do still have moments where you're looking around because there's so much you can do, they made it more streamlined, which...
That is something from the 3DS version.
Yeah, in the 3DS version, you had piece radar.
Yeah, so I didn't notice it, but I'm glad that is something that they carried over from the 3DS for sure. Mm-hmm. Because I remember talking to my wife when this came out, is that she had tried the PlayStation 1 version and got stuck because she missed a piece in a area that you could not go back to.
I think that happened to me too.
Which is in the middle of the game. There's a piece. So you sort of run into a busker camp about what you think, like early third of the game there, Kelly?
To be honest, I can't remember. It's been so long.
Like early third or half of the game. This is right before you lose a major character at the time. And the camp moves. Well, the original camp has a map piece that is hidden in like a barrel or something that if you don't search it, you lose it because of the fact that the camp moves and it's no longer tied to the location. So if you miss that one map piece, you basically hose your entire run. So, I'm glad to, I didn't notice the radar thing, but I'm glad the radar thing is back. So now I apologize for that, but now are we good to move on?
Yeah, we are. Let's go.
Yeah.
What's
okay.
Next?
Co-op action RPG Goblins Die announced, demo available. Developer Potion 8 announced Goblins Die. The action adventure RPG features co-op for up to 5 players and has a demo available on Steam.
So this one to me feels like an old MMO, which there's a lot of aspects to that that don't necessarily appeal to me, but I know some people like old MMO stylings and that. It first gave me vibes of a non-MMO called Dungeon Keeper, where you're basically just going around trying to build up your encampment. And I'm like, oh, you're trying to build up your dungeon, like in Dungeon Keeper.
Dungeon Keeper wasn't an MMO. It was an RTS.
Exactly. He said that. Yeah.
But why
he said it wasn't. He just said it reminded him of, you know, that styling of game, but not as far. But it was not an MMO.
Okay.
Yeah, that was attributing the visual style to the listeners in case they weren't following along. But it is just at least for the first part, fetch quests, doing slow amounts of HP damage while you're collecting loot. You know, you go up to the branch on the ground and wait for the bar to fill up, and then you got 2 roots and all the stuff you'd see trappings of in an MMO. And the default controls were a bit off for me because it was WSAD to move, but the only way you could run is by using the left shift, and that's just a bit awkward placement for my hand anyway. But the other than the controls being a little off, it kind of reminded me gameplay of something like a RuneScape, just because, you know, you're venturing out, you're collecting stuff, you go back to where you came from to try, you know, get your healing salves, get your fetch quests completed. But it's coming out to early access, so the positive sign to that is that they're geared up quite well to have player feedback help shape the game to what people are looking for with this type of title. So it has a lot of good places to go to, especially with a bit of a nostalgic tint to it. That was all I really had for this one.
That works. Thank you.
Maybe something up Chris's alley to try.
Yeah, I think so.
Parasite Mutant demo released. Isetruana released a Steam demo for survival horror RPG Parasite Mutant. Those playing in the late 1990s won't have too much difficulty naming a likely inspiration.
Parasite Eve.
Yeah. Parasite Eve, yeah. This is that Parasite Eve style game that was announced for PlayStation for a while, and then all of a sudden, like end of last year, we heard that it was coming to Steam. And they have a demo. Did you try this? I know you sent this one to me, Dar. I've not gotten to it yet, only because I got really sucked into Sea of Stars and the Dragon Quest VII remake demo. So did you try this one too?
I did. It is very much they lean heavily into recapturing the Parasite Eve experience. When the demo boots up, the first thing they offer is if you want to add retro CRT and rendering, so you can actually make it look like closer to a Parasite Eve, or you can have the more modern visual style with it. The actual gameplay itself feels like lovingly recreated overall. The actual like combat's very similar. You have your melee attacks, the accuracy bubble, I'm not sure, but the pops up for using your guns, and just like it would in Parasite Eve. There's a few things that, but it's not just like something like they're recapturing. There's aspects I don't remember, even in the demo from Parasite Eve, including of you have a mini game where you hold a biometric scanner to a corpse's eye to capture its retina, so you can go like unlock a computer afterwards with their with that data. And there's a little mini game involved with it. And for that to come up so quickly makes me think there's going to be other puzzle solving mechanics that are brought in. And Parasite Eve was a game where all of this mutant stuff happened through mitochondria from the beginning. This feels like something that is more closer to like a Nier Automata or Stellar Blade post-apocalyptic. This has already occurred, possibly even decades, centuries ago, or at least months ago, because you go in and there's no one else living in this area. You're just trying to get more data to when you go to escape. And it's, I found it all a lot of fun. It knows what it's trying to do. And if you ever saw Parasite Eve over the years and went, this is not up my alley at all, then this wasn't going to probably change your mind much. But if you wanted to see what an updated version could look like, these are people that enjoyed the first one for sure.
Yeah. And hopefully not the second one.
Yeah.
Not with those tank controls. Ugh. Did it have tank controls?
No.
Thank God. Because that is my issue. That's my only issue with Parasite Eve 2 is the tank controls. If it didn't have the tank controls, I would love the game. Probably. But the tank controls definitely sell it.
And it is closer to 2 combat style-wise, now that I think about it, because I believe Parasite Eve 1, when you hit the attack button, it paused everything around you. This stays action the whole time.
That's fine. That's not
real time.
That's not too bad. By the way, the demo image still makes me feel like it's calling out to Parasite Eve as well. I'm going to share this in the Discord chat. Unfortunately, it's very tiny, but
protagonist is very much a Abrea.
Yeah, Aya Brea. But yeah, it is very much well, just that opening where she's in the black dress, the black ball gown, basically going to the opera. I mean, this is very much a throwback to that too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you'll. But yeah, anyways, I haven't gotten to it, but this is definitely something that's been on my list. I may even do that demo tonight. I don't know if I'll do that or just Zillia. How long did the demo take you, by the way?
When it comes to for the RPG cast, because there's usually so many I have to go through, I normally set a 30-minute time limit, and then when my alarm goes, unless I'm mid-combat, I stop and exit out of the game. So it wasn't, according to our news article, it's like an hour.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I may not do that on the stream then, because that's only an hour content for a 4-hour block. So next up, The Elder Scrolls Online switching to seasonal update model. ZeniMax Online Studios revealed its 2026 update plans for The Elder Scrolls Online. The MMORPG will be switching to a seasonal update schedule, with the first season beginning in April.
Okay, so, has anyone played ESO? I've played it a little, but I'm not sure how this really changes things, because they already had lots of cyclically produced content to begin with. So,
was ESO pay to start?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, no, I hadn't touched it then.
Buy once, and then you can play as much as you want. But you'd have to buy additional content.
Yeah, you have packs to buy the expansions
if you want to do those that content. So that's how they gated it. Is it going to be more subscription based now, or I guess I missed if they're changing the monetization.
Let's see.
I don't know. Or they're just making it seasons and you have to buy the seasons.
All
now?
Gameplay content in each season, including any new zones, dungeons, storylines, systems, classes, or skill lines, will be free for all owners of the base game, with each season including its own battle pass style experience of offering free rewards and optional paid upgrade paths. There you go. So basically they're going the battle pass route.
Okay.
That's what I thought when they said seasons, because that is a very common term in battle pass games where they call them seasons. Like Overwatch has a season.
Yeah,
I mean, even WoW has the season for the delves.
Yeah, so
nowadays
so basically it's just another way of saying battle pass without saying battle pass.
Mm-hmm. When does this start?
April, they said.
April.
Yeah, first season beginning in April.
It's the year of the MMO, I'm telling you. Get ready and make some ESO characters, I guess, if I get access to all this content all of a sudden.
Yeah. Dragon. Well, here's the thing. It's the content for the season. So we don't know if that's going to be their old expansions.
Mm. So I've still have to get a combo pack to get all the old stuff. Mm. Okay.
Yeah. And running for a distinct theme, running for 3 months. Yeah. It's just a battle pass. It's just another. All they're doing is battle passes.
Yeah.
Hmm. But at least you get the content for free.
Right.
So, Dragon Con demo released. Evolution Game Studio released a demo for draconic fantasy action RPG Dragon Con. The demo
like
is
the
available
Wrath of
on
Con?
The demo no. is available on Steam with the full game in development for PC and consoles.
Oh, you're playing like a Drakthir from, oh, actually, this is what people wanted the Drakthir to look like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, Kelly? Half man, half dragon. And he's apparently knows Kung Fu and can fly around and punch people a lot. So you're a punch dragon. All right.
This one I didn't get a chance to play because the PC game benchmark had wrong information on it and actually made it seem like it was the lowest of all the games. I'm like, okay, this should work fine.
Yeah, nope. And I've,
it was 9 minutes to bring up the main menu.
Okay.
Some Commodore right. levels of load time.
Mm.
I did mention laptop as a potato for the most part.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The minimum requirements on the Steam page say 12 gigs of RAM. I have 8. PC game benchmark said 4. So I was like, oh, this will be fine. Like, no, it was not fine.
Oops.
Nope.
So,
when I watched the trailer, I said that the characters kind of reminded me of Grown Up Spyro the Dragon mixed with the combat of Batman Arkham Asylum. So it'll be interesting to see how they make RPG mechanics in that. But other than that, I didn't have much for this one.
All right, then moving on. Persona mm-hmm. 5, the Phantom X version 3.0 update released. Sega released the version 3.0 update for free-to-play title. It's the gacha game.
Yep.
The update adds the game's next story content as well as new Phantom Thief Frostgale Kotone.
Oh, boy.
I would have checked this out, except especially since it's a gacha, if I haven't played P5, I mm-hmm. didn't want to risk any, this is after content.
No, they're completely separate storylines. Okay. So.
That's good to know, at least.
But even then, just play Persona 5. Don't
You'll
do a gacha.
You'll have a better time.
Yeah. I guess that's the new character, and she is an ice skater.
This just makes me want more Tokyo Mirage sessions, so.
I mean, that was originally called Fire Emblem Cross SMT.
Mm-hmm.
So,
considering I played that first before Modern Persona, it's very funny to me anyway that anytime I looked, or like I played P4 Golden and went, oh, this is Tokyo Mirage sessions.
Yeah,
pretty much. So
the Fire Emblem characters were the personas in that, more or less.
Pretty much. Except for Dragon Girl. What was her? What? God, I can't think of her name, and she's been in like four or five of them.
Tika?
Tika, yes, thank you. She was not a persona. She was a virtual idol.
and Anna the Merchant was there too.
Yeah, so Fire Emblem Path of Radiance added to Nintendo Switch Online. Fire Emblem Path of Radiance is now available on Nintendo Switch 2. The tactical RPG is part of the Nintendo GameCube Nintendo Classics Library available to Nintendo Switch Online plus expansion pack members.
I am considering upgrading for this one.
I think it is kind of BS that you can't buy these things and you have to have their online subscription to play them.
I mean, it's $50 a year.
It's still BS because I would, you know, because what if you discontinue your Switch Online account?
You still want it to be, you want it to be purchasable? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I think this is a far better deal than both Xboxes and PSNs.
I mean, we yelled at them for years to have a Netflix for old games, and now they do. And
I'm just saying, I would like them to be purchasable, like as well. Okay, sure. That's where I am.
Well, here's the good news. It won't matter since it's digital and the store will eventually shut down. So even if you could purchase it, it will be on a system you're not going to want to keep around 10 years from now and won't work anyway. So, you know, they're just saving you money.
Well, that's why I want them to be purchasable.
No.
So that way, if they shut down the store, I don't have an issue with not being able to play them.
Hmm.
But with the Switch Online having save states and the ability to rewind, I feel like this is going to be awesome to play on that service.
Yeah, no, this is, I'm just glad they're actually putting this one, you know, making it available because, you know, not many people have access to GameCubes.
And so GameCube's kind of a pain to emulate.
I found that out with Ogre Battle 64. But I was also trying to do that back when I was in the military in 2006.
So what you're telling me is my physical copy of this can no longer let me purchase a house. Yeah.
No, it'll still be worth something.
Yeah, because it is still a rare game to actually have. So yeah, I think it's... I honestly like to see them bring the Wii one forward. Because it is a direct sequel to Path of Radiance.
One of these days.
Yep. So, next, Avowed releasing on PS5 in February. Obsidian Entertainment's Avowed is coming to PS5, the first-person action RPG set in the same world as Pillars of Eternity, will arrive on the console next month. I know people who really liked Avowed, and I've heard other people have very mixed feelings about it.
I'm curious about it. Don't you play as a fungus?
Sorry, what?
Don't you play as a fungus in it?
Oh, a fungus. I thought you said... I was like, did I hear that right? Yeah, I think... I honestly don't know what you play as. All I know is that there are some people who really like it. I have heard a few mixed things here and there.
This just added to my list of things I need to learn more about because as someone that has a poor running PC and doesn't have a Xbox, it just immediately went into the pile of games like Starfield and some of the others that are Microsoft only where like this will never be playable for me. So might as well not know about it.
You should really just save up for a new computer, man.
All right, let's move on.
Not many feelings about Avowed, huh?
Nah.
All right. New release date.
I guess a new release date lightning round.
Oh, yes. All right. Here we go. We've got... do we have anything? Bum,
bum, bum, bum, bum. Well, we have our announcements first, though.
Oh. Okay, then. Do it.
No, that's what I meant. The new release dates, as in the sheet.
Well, I have one game in the sheet. and I've lost the sheet. Where's the sheet?
We have five games listed.
No, different. Okay. Oh, what are we talking about?
They're called
about?
Very similar things.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Okay, yes. Do the new release dates that you're thinking of, Tam. Hit us.
All right. Mega Man Star Force Legacy Collection releasing in March. So that's the collection of the Star Force games and their associated, and it looks like it's going to be all versions, and it's going to be all seven games, and it's coming in March. So yay. These are the pseudo sequels to Battle Network, because it's basically the same system but different story, same gameplay systems. And it's coming with some quality of life features and options, including autosave, camera panning, a speed boost option, adjustable encounter rate, damage reduction, and more.
Okay.
Front Mission 3 Remake releasing on PC, PlayStation, Xbox in January. After releasing on Switch earlier this year, Front Mission 3 Remake is coming to more platforms. The game will hit PC, PS4, PS5, Xbox One, and Xbox Series S and X in January with a demo available now. So I'm excited for that one. Front Mission 3 is Front Mission 3. I got it for a five-finger discount.
Good game on PS1.
Hmm. Yeah.
I've always been curious about this series.
I think 3 is the best of the Front Missions, honestly. Stardew Valley dedicated Switch 2 version released in North America. Concerned Ape has given Stardew Valley's dedicated Switch 2 version a surprise release in North America. However, the developer has noted some issues with the version, which will be addressed as soon as possible. So for those who want Stardew Valley on Switch 2, you can get Stardew Valley on Switch 2. Yay!
Yay!
Jimmy and the Pulsating Mass coming to consoles in February. Electric Airship and Starseed Games are bringing Jimmy and the Pulsating Mass to consoles. The turn-based RPG, which features 16-bit graphics and horror elements, will release on its new platforms next month. That's 16-bit? That looks...
Yeah, that's 16-bit.
Okay.
That's Earthbound is 16-bit.
Yep. It's just flat.
Definitely has Earthbound vibes to it.
Mm-hmm.
It was also released on Steam 8 years ago-ish now, so if people wanted to check the game out, this is just a good excuse to talk about the new ports. You can get the game now as well.
I'm going to... That is a hard pass. Because we know I don't do horror games. And Herfrog would like to remind everybody that if you have a pulsating mass... please consult a doctor.
Thank you.
Towerborn gets February date, PS5 version, no longer free to play. Xbox Game Studios and Stoic announced that Towerborn will fully release in February. The companies also announced a PS5 version and that it will no longer be released as a free to play title.
Okay.
Cute art style. Kind of wonder why they changed it. Hopefully it's for they had enough here to make it a full length game rather than a live service-y type thing, and not here's a whole bunch of downloads you can do after paying it.
Pulled up the Steam page on it. It is going to be $25 for the base version, but they have a founder pack available. So I think it's it was on Steam September 10th of 2024. So let's see. Yeah, so it looks like it was a live service game because one of the reviews on Steam is commenting about cosmetics tied to microtransactions.
Okay. That'll be $25.
Yeah, so and apparently Stoic also realized how awful of a decision most of this early access was because the game is no longer going free to play and is now going to be a full price feature complete game. That's again from a review. So, but those are it for release dates. So what's coming out this week?
All right. I've got one game for sure. Legend of Heroes Trails Beyond the Horizons
Yay.
Yay.
People are excited?
I'm two games behind.
Yeah.
I'm seven behind.
I've barely even started.
Alright. What else do I have? Anything else? I got one. Oh, go ahead and hit me.
We talked about it a couple of times. Cassette Boy, Game Boy Color looking Link's Awakening action RPG.
Okay.
That's coming out same day as Trails Beyond the Horizon.
Oh, goodness. And it's doing like a Fez sort of thing.
Yeah.
Where your camera affects what you can do and not do in the room, in the world. Cool.
Yeah. It was cute. I played the demo for it on a previous cast.
Okay. I think that's it then.
Pretty much.
Cassette Boy and Trails.
It's still early in the year, so yeah, I mean,
it's normal.
It's pretty normal.
Okay then. Now what?
Early access.
All right, what do we got?
Yuma Nest coming to Steam Early Access in March. Developer Pyoko? I don't know.
Pyoko.
Pyoko.
Okay. Pyoko.
I'm surprised Vaughn's not
he fell asleep.
Being like, this is how it's done, you idiots. Announced that Yuma Nest will release on Steam Early Access in a couple of months. The game is a sandbox side-scrolling action RPG in a Metroidvania-style world. Might be something Saiten would want to try. Saiten's always talking about the 2D platform. Vaughn hasn't been fully invested. How dare you, Vaughn!
Alright.
Interesting little like puzzly things.
Sandbox Metroidvania isn't something you don't hear too often.
Yeah. Next we have Nested Lands coming to early access this month. Meta Publishing and 1M Bits Hordes. Medieval Survival RPG. There we go. Medieval Survival. Nested Lands is coming to early access on PC in a couple of weeks. An updated demo is also planned, which will include co-op multiplayer.
Yeah. One thing I have to laugh at about this, because usually the open world survival games take a while to iron out some bugs, is of course Owlcat Games would have to release it under their sub-publishing label, Meta Publishing. Like, we know it's you, Owlcat. This will be good in 2030.
What? Is Owlcat?
Publishing side, not
all right. All right.
I just like teasing Owlcat for being basically the new Bethesda to me.
Yeah. Nested Lands. We'll see when it comes out.
And then because it's been a month, we have 50,000 editorials.
Okay. Let's go fast then.
We have the Legend of Zelda series, Where to Start, Part 1 and Part 2. So the Legend of Zelda series has been thriving since 1986, and RP Gamer is here to help digest the full set of titles across the almost 40 years of history in our next Where to Start feature. The first part covers the games from 1986 to 2006, and then part two will cover all the entries after 2006.
I contributed to this because at the time of writing, I was the only one that had finished Hyrule Warriors Age of Imprisonment.
Yeah, a whole bunch of people helped with this one. Andy Privateer, Alex Fuller, Sam Walker, Casey Pritt, Cassandra Ramos, Pascal Takaya, Aman Bimani, Michael Baker, Jordan McCain, Ezra Cannell, Matt Mason, and Kelly Ryan.
Did we even acknowledge the CDI games?
Do the joke that we talked about?
Nobody knows what you're talking about.
I know, I can't. I don't. Didn't have it up. Didn't think we were going to stay on this long enough. So I'm trying to bring up the actual article.
I didn't think anyone would ask.
It's fine. So we got all the games. Go check them out.
There's a lot of games. So we have the RP Gamer's Most Anticipated Games 2026 edition. So with the as we approach the end of 2025, because again, we have a month's worth of editorials, it's time for RP Gamer to look ahead at what awaits us in the next year. Our team has picked out nearly 30 titles that are on the horizon. So let's see if there's any good highlights in this. Code Vein 2, Dragon Quest 7 Reimagined, of course. We can guess who put that one in. Dulluk Town, Fields of Mistria, the new Fire Emblem game.
Anyway, check it out. It's cool.
Yeah.
Go see.
Lots of stuff in there.
Yeah. It looks like Ezra reviewed the Legend Heroes game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Legend of Heroes Trails Beyond the Horizon review.
What do we got? 4.5 out of 5. Excellent cutscene animation. Fantastic voice acting. The most satisfying action combat in the entire series. Outstanding narrative achievements that rely on 12 previous games of context. Nice. And the music still doesn't reach the highs of previous entries. Wow.
I like that. 12 games of context.
Get playing.
Hey, that started with the first one.
Which just re-released. So, Potions, A Curious Tale review. Potions, A Curious Tale is a puzzle adventure game from indie developer Stumbling Cat that is now out on consoles after launching for PC last year. It offers a soothing but shallow experience, mostly held up by its cozy vibes. And this was done by Aman Bimani.
We got 2.5 out of 5. Brewing potions and solving puzzles can be relaxing. Cozy vibes and soothing tunes. Rushed story, uninspired visuals, and lacks depth across the board.
Glad I didn't bite on this.
Yeah, so it would seem.
It looks cute.
Hey, Ryan, you reviewed the next one.
Yeah, Kingdoms of the Dump review. Dive into a landfill-inspired magical kingdom with Roach Games' Kingdoms of the Dump. This turn-based RPG has a lot of ambition, but does its inspirations sink it into garbage? There we go. Land in the sanitized hall of greats or settle in the mushy middle. That's actually a really good blurb.
And so game itself is, people will probably call me out for being a little too harsh on it, but the overworld moving around in dungeons is of like Super Mario RPG, except like a lot more or a lot less intuitive for the platforming. So you kind of like clip into the walls. There's a dedicated unstuck button that you can use anytime. So that, you know, they had to have realized that it's just easier to teleport you to the beginning rather than, okay, they got stuck again. Oh, you got stuck in that spot again. And for me anyway, I've never been too much of a proponent against a simplistic attack, heal type of combat system. But in Kingdoms of the Dump, that's kind of what it boils down to quite frequently, except they still want you to do the timed button presses and navigate through a couple different menus to get to the proper attack that they want you, like that's most optimal use. So instead of making a fight take 2 minutes, it's taking 4 or 5. And it was just death by a lot of little cuts of things like that. And whenever they have really great poetic moments in their story, it would be undercut with a dad pun about janitorial stuff. And it doesn't mean that the jokes weren't still entertaining. Like when I put in the screenshot was a character who saw snakes suddenly appear, went, holy shirt, suit and tie. Like, you know what they were trying to go there for. It's just, it has very fun characters and a very unique aesthetic, and is worthwhile to check out. It's not going to be the next 5 out of 5 indie game, in my opinion. I gave it a 3 for the unique premise, cast of characters not found anywhere else. Soundtrack is full of delightful nostalgic hits. There's definitely a few of them that are very close to, but not exactly like Final Fantasy IV, which I very much appreciate. And platforming was definitely very frustrating, and the tone shifts were just too much at times.
And that was part of your summary there. Unique premise, a cast of characters not found anywhere else. Soundtrack is full of delightful nostalgic hits, but the platforming was frustrating. And as you just said, the tone, and I know you wrote the review, obviously, but tone shifts between serious and comedic too much in ways that is a disservice to both. Well, man, and a lot of people had sort of high hopes for that one too. So next we have a Xenogears retro review. It's been a while since we've had a retro review. Xenogears Ambition paved the way for many RPGs decades after its release. Early poor pacing and Disc 2 woes aside, its groundbreaking narrative and outstanding presentation still cemented as one of the all-time RPG greats. Who did this retro review there?
Jordan McLean.
So 4.5 out of 5, outstanding narrative with top-notch writing and emotional impact, masterful conveyance of themes, gorgeous designs, outstanding soundtrack, with the cons being poor pacing, especially early on, combat not executed to its full potential, and leaves players waiting for more side quests.
Especially on Disc 2.
Is that team responsible for the Xenoblade games we know and love now?
Many of them, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Although the head writer just retired from gaming due to personal reasons. I think someone in the family must have gotten ill based on the, because they said, don't need to worry about me. I'm fine. So I think there's something going on like with a family member where they had to step away from gaming completely.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
I would just love to see them go back and do a remaster or a remake of that game with its original vision.
Yeah, the problem is the IP owners.
Yeah.
So that's all kind of, but yeah, no, this is the same. It's the same team as Xenosaga. It's the same team as Xenoblade for a lot of the, you know, heads up people. The problem comes in is who owns the IP as far as going back and getting that original vision, because I think they could do it now, you know, because I think part of their limitation was not just, you know, being rushed by Square, but also just tech limitations at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So I love,
wasn't it originally supposed to be Final Fantasy 7, and because it was kind of getting too dark,
eight, I think it was eight.
I had always heard seven.
I think it's seven, but I also think it doesn't matter much. All right, and somebody reviewed Dispatch a little. Well, an impression, I guess.
Adventure Corner.
People love Dispatch.
That's another one I've been curious about.
This is like the Telltale people making a new adventure game, right? Where choices matter.
Yeah.
This time with superheroes. So you can reach Alex Fuller's impressions of that.
I've heard the one complaint is that there are only two romanceable options.
Hmm.
That is the one complaint I've heard from people.
Fair enough.
Yeah, coming from some games where there's 32 of them and that doesn't really differentiate much, having an actual story that means there's a reason for it isn't the worst thing, in my opinion.
Then we also have an adventure corner of 1000x resist. I don't know if that's cross resist.
Well,
or
we know that if it's a Japanese game, then it must be cross, right? I don't know if Sunset Visitors. Oh, yeah, they are not English, so we're going to go with cross then. 1000 cross resist. I don't know what it is, though. It's an adventure. Josh isn't here to tell us. Or Jordan isn't here to tell us. The screenshots are weird. Yeah, there's a lot of sci-fi happening, including large crying children. I don't know what's... This is a weird game.
It looks like a weird game, all right.
It looks like the walking parts of SMT5. To me, anyway.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. It looks like the walking parts of SMT5, yeah. Or Drakengard or something. You know, it's just very weird aesthetically. And there's nothing wrong with that. It just looks weird. Next, we have an editorial, a game in, I'm going to destroy this word, Chiaroscuro. Thank you. Looking back at Expedition 33, Sandfall Interactive's debut title, Clair Obscur, Expedition 33, has had a meteoric rise in its young life. It's worth examining why it gained so much hype and if it's worthy of it. Who wrote this one?
Got K. Vandevert.
I think they are someone new.
I think they are. So go check that out. And then we have Backlog in the Year from Sam Wachter.
With her year-end wrap-up and also a cute dog pic.
Mm-hmm. And then finally, a review of Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy.
In 2021, Eidos Montreal released Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy. While we don't have a time machine to go back to when it released, we can assure you that Star-Lord is still a putz, and Cosmo is still the bestest best boy in the galaxy.
And Groot has a llama for some reason.
Yeah, that llama is a thing.
Okay.
who wrote this one up?
Sam. Sam Wachter again.
Yeah, that's right. We were discussing this because I was like, wait, didn't Wheels write one? Because Wheels, I knew, had played this.
Mm.
So it was kind of shocking that no one had written a review for this. And I think part of it was because of the backlash of Avengers at the time. Because the Marvel's Avengers game was not that good.
Wait, did we read the pluses and minuses yet?
We had not. So okay. Sam gave it a 3.5 out of 5, saying excellent main story and characterization. Character banter is very amazing. I have something on that one. Soundtrack is epic. Cons, the combat needs a bit more fluidity. Texture issues, particularly in the final chapters, are too noticeable, and it is too linear. So going to the character banter, I remember this part where, because I was watching Wheels play this on one of his streams, and during Q&A quest, and like all the characters are stuck inside of rooms, and they're actually like singing, trying to guide a character to like the right places, because I think it was the llama trying to guide the llama around to like hit the buttons to get them out of the rooms or something. It's been a while since I've seen this, obviously, because this was from 2021, but I just remember that is like the epitome of the writing in that game. It's the characters are just so well written for it.
The soundtrack in this game made just for me.
So and that's it.
Chris? Okay, we did it.
We made
Yay.
It.
All right, did we come up with a question of the week? We forgot to do that this morning.
If you were an inanimate, or if you could bond with an inanimate object to turn into a powerful weapon, what would it be?
An ordinary, everyday object, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And response to that one anime game that we were talking about.
Well, now I have to ask you. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to say, I don't have high hopes for that game based on just the general perfluence of anime games not usually being good.
Okay. Let's do what you're going to play this week. Robert.
Well, Tales of Xillia, because that's my stream game. More Sea of Stars, because I have been enjoying that from the get-go. And I really don't know what else I will play, if I'll play something on the side or not. I do know I should be streaming today and tomorrow. Next week, I am not streaming. I will not be around because I am on call all weekend again.
Okay.
Because of scheduling issues that have been sorted out for next year.
And Kelly?
More Hades, more Core Keeper.
And Ryan?
Ryan.
J-Rogue PG, mm-hmm. Trying to say that out loud is always fun. Going to hopefully be able to beat that, and I'm thinking visual novel after words. Steins Gate keeps popping out in my head. So
cool. And I will probably move on to some sort of single-player RPG next week. I'm just not sure which. Maybe I'll try this Dragon Quest demo and see if I can get excited for that. don't know.
I think that, that game's going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I was checking something. What game is going to be good?
Seven.
Dragon DQ Quest 7.
Oh, yes. Definitely. I was just reading that on our Discord where someone finished the demo and was like, I need this game like now. I mean, I could play it now, but only the old versions. So I think this reimagined is definitely going to be a very good game this year, and probably a top contender for next year's remake of the year.
I guess we'll find out.
We will. That's it.
In 2027, right? Though.
That's it. That's it.
I think that's everybody. I don't know if Hendy was around today or not. I haven't seen.
We'll find out. But let's wrap this up. Thanks everybody for watching. If you would like to leave a comment and answer the question in our show, we have like a billion places for you to do it. Go to the RP Gamer Discord and post it in the channel there. Go to the post on the rpgamer.com and post it in the as a reply. You could do it on the YouTube video too, and tell us what ordinary everyday object you would bond with to make it become a powerful weapon. And thanks everybody for listening. Keep subscribing to us in your favorite podcast app of choice, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye-bye.
I hope you're enjoying 2026 so far. Bye-bye, everybody.
See ya.
Take care, everybody.